promise we'll get your reaction, and
there are so many risks that have been raised that the fact that this is still being treated as a straightforward planning issue rather than a national security issue.
Now Labour MPs call for the Chinese super embassy in London to be blocked ahead of their leader, the Prime Minister, who visiting Beijing later this month. We'll speak with one of those MPs.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump's calling on those who he says are Iranian patriots to keep protesting following widespread anti-government demonstrations. One official says around 2,000 people, including security personnel, have been killed. Here, the Iranian ambassador has been summoned by the Foreign Secretary. The Justice Minister, Jake Richards, told LBC the government is monitoring the situation closely.
This is a fast-moving situation. The evidence from what's happening in Iran is unclear. It's clearly something terrible is happening. This is a delicate diplomatic situation. I think it's right to be cautious, but let's also be very clear as a country, not just as a government, that we don't stand with the Iranian regime and we do stand with innocent protesters.
A government minister has rejected claims of a U-turn over plans for mandatory digital ID. It's reported they will be optional rather than compulsory to prove someone's right to work when they're introduced in 2029. Home Office Minister Mike Tapp told Andrew Marr the plans are not being watered down.
There will be mandatory digital checks for work, and that will help, for example, the employer that I met earlier, who had previously had to deal with a fraudulent passport they didn't know was fraudulent.
In the last hour, we've been told a man's been arrested over a killing in Milton Keynes in 2007. Umar Farooq, who's 46, was detained at Heathrow Airport, having flown in from Pakistan via Uzbekistan. He'll appear in court tomorrow over the death of Atiq Rahman in Wolverton. New higher council tax bans are among today's budget announcements by Scotland's finance minister. There are also plans for a new air departure tax, through which a new levy will be charged on users of private jets. The leader of Kent County Council has told LBC she backs calls for the head of South East Water to resign over outages. Around 25,000 properties are facing supply issues for a fourth day following Storm Goretti, some for the second time in weeks. Erica Popplewell from the environmental campaign group River Action was asked whether South East Water's chief executive should carry the can.
We need to see action by the water companies and also by government, because the government is overseeing private companies but delivering an essential public service. So it needs action from both parts. Whether he should go, it's more fundamental than that. He is one man. The whole system is broken.
The companies apologised. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed down 3 points at 10,137. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather. Patchy rain lingering over the southeast tonight, but clear elsewhere, lows of -2. Wintry sunshine across the south tomorrow, once cloud clears in the southeast. Turning breezy, cloudy and wet in the north and west. Highs of 5 to 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good evening, 3 minutes past 10 is the time, and you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC, in for Ben Kentish. Later this hour,
this deadly corridor crisis isn't befitting of the heroic doctors, nurses and other health professionals who work in our NHS. It's not what we expect from our NHS.
The Lib Dems pledge to give patients a legal right to be admitted or referred for treatment within 12 hours of arriving at A&E to end the corridor crisis. We'll speak with a Lib Dem MP. Staying with domestic matters,
we know that in the north, particularly investment into large infrastructure projects, into transport, has been poor for so many decades.
That's the Mayor of York and North Yorkshire, David Skaith, as the government announces its intention to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. You'll hear my full interview with him later. It's not all rosy for the government, though.
In the NHS, we have an initiative called GERFT, Get It Right First Time. That should be our New Year's resolution for 2026. Let's try and get it right first time.
That was the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, this morning warning about U-turns. This evening, the government are accused of their 13th U-turn after watering down plans for digital IDs. What on earth is going on? And after midnight,
we basically take a group of people, we take them on the tube, and we we take our trousers off and we sit and we behave normally.
There are calls to ban no trousers tube ride. This is where 400 odd Londoners strip down to their underwear in front of shop families and tourists. Why do they do it?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
We start, though, with the story with which I think we started every show this week, 3 days in, Iran, 2 days in, sorry, that I was on Sunday, Iran protests, where we've seen now more than 2,000 people reported as dead, as Donald Trump has said help is on the way. This, the violent crackdown by security forces on protests in Iran, that's according to one human rights group. As I say, we've been hearing from the US President, Donald Trump, who's been speaking in Detroit.
Keep protesting. Take over your institutions, if possible, and save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused. If the numbers are right now, I hear five different sets of numbers. I hear numbers. Look, one death is too much, but I hear much lower numbers, and then I hear much higher numbers. But I say save their names because they'll pay a very big price. And I've canceled all meetings with the Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. And all I say to them is help is on its way. You saw that I put tariffs on anybody doing business with Iran. Just went into effect today. And I say make Iran great again. You know, it was a great country until these monsters came in and took it over. And it's all very fragile. What would have happened to us? I'm telling you. If I didn't win this election, would have happened to us.
We're now talking about the United States. Earlier on LBC News, we asked Sir Richard Dalton, who is the former UK ambassador to Iran, when Donald Trump speaks of help on the way, what form of action that could take?
Most likely bombing of security force facilities, perhaps bombing of government centres, maybe an attempt to kill the Iranian leadership. This is punishment. It could be that he's moving too late, that only very small numbers are now in the streets. The repression has been fierce. These appalling killings, which the government rightly condemns, have had their effect in keeping people at home.
And he mentions bombings earlier on Nick Ferrari's show on LBC. Justin Forsyth, who is currently an advisor to the Crown Prince of Iran, exile Prince Reza Pahlavi, he spoke on LBC earlier.
That we need some military action from the United States to send a warning shot across the Iranian regime because they're massacring people. Thousands and thousands of people are being killed. We know the Americans won't put boots on the ground, and we don't want them to. This has to be an Iranian revolution. It's Iranians on the ground that are dying. Iranians are boots on the ground, but we do need some military action.
And what of the British government and the opposition, understandably discussed in the House of Commons earlier?
The United Kingdom condemns in the strongest of terms the horrendous and brutal killing of Iranian protesters, and we demand that the Iranian authorities respect the fundamental rights and freedoms of their citizens.
Iran is a hostile state and a threat to our country, a threat to the Middle East, and a threat to the world, and Britain must have the resolve to deal with them.
You heard there from the Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper and her opposite number, Dame Priti Patel of the Conservatives. Before I speak with my guest, Dr. Andrew Peake, who was previously working in the State Department under President Trump. We have actually heard again from the President. He's just landed in Maryland. He's been speaking in the last few minutes.
In the White House now, we're going to look at the whole situation that's going on in Iran. It's really bad stuff. And Minnesota's going to have to take care of itself for a little while. We have tremendous theft and fraud going on in that state because you have an incompetent governor. Grossly incompetent governor and a corrupt governor, but we'll straighten that out. But Iran is on my mind when I see the kind of death that is happening over there, we think. So we're going to get some accurate numbers. I'll have it in about 20 minutes. We'll get some accurate numbers as to what's happening with regard to the killing. The killing looks like it's significant, but we don't know yet for certain. I'll know within 20 minutes. So, and we'll act accordingly.
And I don't think that's the last we'll hear from Donald Trump this evening. So when he does speak again, we will bring it to you here first on LBC. Let's speak first with Dr. Andrew Peake, who was former Deputy Assistant Secretary for Iran and Iraq at the US State Department under President Trump. In his first term, he worked specifically on the reimposition of sanctions against Iran. He's now Director at the Atlantic Council's Snowcroft Center. Delighted to say Dr. Peake joins me now. Thank you for your time. Could I put firstly, when Donald Trump says that help is on the way, what does that look like, do you think?
I have to say, I think that means some kind of military action. You know, he announced yesterday the 25% secondary tariffs on countries that traded with Iran. That is not something that would either change the regime's behavior by itself, nor, since China is the major economic partner of Iran, is that something he would want to keep on for an extended period of time. He's valued the trading relationship the U.S. has with China. So to me, that looks like a stopgap until additional assets of some kind get in the theater or our bases are made ready for a potential counterstrike. But I do think something stronger is coming.
When you talk about and noting the work you did on sanctions against Iran when you were working for the State Department, when that was announced yesterday, I think there was a sense from many that that didn't go far enough and that there are already so many sanctions against Iran and there's not many countries really doing meaningful trade with Iran. It's in the low numbers, China being one, as you say. Does that have any effect at all, what he announced yesterday on sanctions?
It does. I mean, what was there's only one indicator of sanctions that really, really matters, and it's the amount of hard currency the Iranian regime has in its central bank, because it uses that hard currency, not its domestic currency, to support terrorist groups like Hezbollah, to support attacks overseas, but also to prop up the rial at home. Hyperinflation on its currency, the rial, is what spurred the protests today. It's always been the weakness of the regime, and so the secondary tariffs that Trump put on will affect that, because China will have to offer a deeper discount for buying oil. But like the first time, that's a beat or two away. I mean, Iran's not going to get new hard currency in the next 24 hours or the next 36 hours. It's at least a few weeks away before that has an impact. That won't affect right now. That's why I think something else is coming.
And there's been reports of gold being transferred out of the country, linked with the Ayatollah, of course. I'm curious to know whether you think that signals a regime that knows its time's up.
Oh, you know, we've sounded the death knell for the Islamic Republic a few times now, every time there's thousands of Iranians in the streets. I do think that is the single most important asset the Iranian regime has. It's this hard currency, the liquid currency, gold, yen, euros. If they're moving them out of the country truly, then that is the most important indicator I've seen that they are preparing for every eventuality.
The ambassador, former UK ambassador to Iran, who I played earlier on, made the connection that, in his view, this can be masqueraded by President Trump as acting in the best interests of the protesters, but he was saying that it's almost retribution because of the deposition of the Shah back in 1979 and the actions of the Islamic Republic over many decades. Do you accept this is about more than just the protests we've seen in recent days?
You know, I'm not sure how strongly the president looks back and it says, well, you know, 40 years ago they did X, 30 years ago they did Y. I think others in the top circle, particularly those that served in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, for the first time there's a significant amount of global war on terror veterans among the top circle of Trump decision makers. Many Americans who were in that position have suffered from Iranian munitions, from explosively formed projectiles. Before then, the Iranians did horrible things to American officials during the Lebanese Civil War. We had one official who was, I believe, skinned alive by an Iranian proxy with videos of his suffering sent to our embassy in Athens. So there is no doubt that for a lot of Americans, there is a moral element of this that's much more recent. I think for the president in particular, you know, he has very much, he's been called at times an isolationist, but what he really has is more of a common man foreign policy. If he sees horrible things going on, he will do what he can to stop it. The same way the common man off the street would look at a gassing in Syria or a massacre in Iran and say, oh, that's horrible. Why can't we do something about that? Kind of ideology aside, let's act. I think that's much more powerful for him.
You spoke firstly about airstrikes and that being what you feel the president is getting at. People understandably now are sort of messaging in Dr. Peake and saying, well, look at what we've seen play out over the years in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya. Why on earth should we think that this is going to be any different, particularly given the backdrop for this? The Ayatollah is also not just the supreme leader, he's also the religious leader of the Islamic Republic.
So they're quite right to be concerned. You know, I served in Afghanistan with the army. I know a lot of British people did. They were great soldiers for us. A lot of Americans, as I noted, did also. So I think there are real concerns, particularly insofar as Iran, unlike Iraq and Syria, is not a minoritarian regime. It's not a minority religion ruling over a majority that would have kind of a common interest in ruling the country after Saddam or Assad is gone. It would almost certainly be a bloody contestation of power within among Shia Persians. I do think the religious piece is less of a concern. You know, Khomeini's religious credentials himself are not that impressive, certainly compared to Sistani's in Iraq. Mm. And because Sistani is considered kind of not only the more qualified, but probably as a wider religious following, that combined with the failures of the Islamic Republic, I do think there would be less of a religious fallout if there was some kind of action against Khomeini.
Lastly, we saw what happened with President Maduro. We've seen in the past the United States be involved with leaders. Could you imagine a situation where the Ayatollah is captured or even killed by the U.S.?
Yes, absolutely. I think we've crossed that Rubicon with Maduro. I don't think there was, as there shouldn't have been, probably any kind of global, you know, international outrage that a leader of a foreign country was targeted in such a way. I suspect, even though it would be atypical, that the world would not react too terribly awfully if Khomeini was removed. There are other Iranians.
Just on that though, you were referring to including being killed.
Yeah, including being killed. I don't think there would be tremendous outrage. This is a horrible regime. There would be a difference between being concerned about consequences and being concerned about the moral act of killing Khomeini. I don't think the moral act would be tremendously outrageous. There are other Iranians who would step into that role. There might be a beat or two. It might take a moment, but they don't lack for Ayatollahs.
I'm really grateful for your time. Thank you. That was Dr. Andrew Peake, who was a Deputy Assistant Secretary for Iran and Iraq at the US State Department under President Trump. He now is with the Atlantic Council's Scowcroft Center. Keen for your views this hour, 0345 6060973. It's a simple question. Donald Trump says help is on the way. What should that help look like?
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Find me somebody to love.
You'll love the Dreams Mega Clearance event. Shop now for up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Hi, babe. What
day. Fancy staying in tonight instead? Mackie's calling my name and I saw you can get £5 off if you spend £20 on the app. So, you in? Of course you are. Okay, bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. Save £5 when you spend £20 on food and drink via delivery. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Service and delivery fees apply. Valid once per week, 1st to the 31st of January. Participating restaurants. Serving times apply.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Henry Riley on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10:19 the time. Donald Trump says help is on the way. What should that help look like? Steve's in Haringey. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Henry. First time caller to your show.
Well, that's lovely to hear. Why have you called in?
Okay, look, of course people, I don't agree with the Iranian government at all on religious grounds either.
Yes.
Their behaviour is despicable and it's completely wrong and it needs to stop, I agree. People have the right to peacefully protest in favour of change for the better, of course. And they have no right to gun them down, of course. A note of caution, though, be careful with Donald Trump. Do it on the basis that you are on your own. Don't expect the American army to come to your rescue, because Donald Trump did a deal with the Taliban and put them back in charge. And I fact-checked that this evening.
Well, the Taliban are in charge in Afghanistan, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
That's quite right. Afghanistan was a specific case, wasn't it? And look, our previous guest served in Afghanistan, as he was mentioning, but that clearly, I mean, no one can claim any credit for how that turned out. The hope here, I would surmise, Steve, is that there is a opposition leader or an exiled prince who could go in an interim term, would be their view, and then hopefully have some sort of election.
Lovely. It'd be great. But let's be realistic about this. The region is very prone to power struggles. Very. Mm. You know, after they got rid of bin Laden, people said that they had another 1,000 of them. You know? So, there's...
What do you want to see then? What would you like to see, Steve, in terms of US help?
I don't know what Donald Trump has got in mind.
Well,
all I'm saying
you and me both.
All I'm saying is... People should not proceed on the basis that they are going to have this saviour come romping over the hill with an army to support them in what is probably going to be a very bloody conflict.
Mm. Well, that's the issue, and you're right. I mean, one thing I think we haven't considered is if the Ayatollah is removed, and look, no one will shed a tear for him. I mean, he has led the sort of poison in the Middle East. If it then becomes military rule, and we then have the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guards sort of running Iran, then that's going to be as bad, if not potentially worse.
There isn't someone waiting in the wings that we know of who can...
Well, there's the Crown Prince. Are you talking about who could unite?
This is going to be a bloody conflict, right? It's the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help at all that some people are protesting, are going around saying death to this person and death to that person, because it makes people paranoid and they pull weapons out.
Mm.
So really they should stick to peaceful protest. Keep the moral high ground, and they'll have the support of, you know, everybody else. But it's one thing to say there might be some nice person, this benevolent person, who's going to come in and take charge. The pushy people with the guns are the ones who take charge.
Mm. Well, it's a fair point. Thank you, Steve, in Haringey. I think that the thing is, there's often been this view, and this people have been saying, well, the Iranian regime will fall when the people of Iran want it to. I mean, since 2009, when we had the Green Movement, since 2022, where we had mass protests because of women's rights, because of Mahsa Amini, who was killed in custody. I mean, they've lost faith with the Iranian regime for some time, hence why most of them have left the country. So I don't know what really needs to happen to help the people of Iran next, short of, as our guest said, Dr. Peake, saying, who worked with Donald Trump, by the way, there could be some sort of airstrike. But again, that doesn't necessarily get you the desired outcome. Adam's in Romford. Hello, Adam.
Hello, evening.
Evening. Thank you for calling in. What did you want to say?
No, it's fairly disappointing. You just hear all these people banging on, Donald Trump banging on about what should happen in somebody else's country. It is their country. Leave them be. Let them get on with what they get on with. What we need to do is remove the sanctions. What we need to do is start making friends with them. What we need to do is set a good example.
Hold on, Adam. You can't sort of make friends with this regime. They've just killed 2,000 of their civilians.
Well, we're friends with Netanyahu, who's killed 70,000, or mostly 70,000 civilians.
Hold on, Adam, this is different. We're talking about, in this situation, an Ayatollah and the IRGC.
There's nothing different about a live human being and a dead human being.
But the IRGC who've fired on protesters.
You don't know that.
What do you mean? That's
what we've got cameras in there.
We've seen videos. We've seen.
It's hearsay.
What, you don't think hundreds, if not 2,000, the latest count people have been killed in Iran?
I don't know.
There's people who've been sentenced to the death penalty.
And you don't know.
Adam, you can't just say because we're not there. Because we're not there. If it was because we're not there, then we wouldn't have any reporting on what's going on in Gaza, which you just mentioned, for example.
Well, I did mention Gaza. We're not there, so we don't know whether it's 70,000. But what we do know, if you levelled the whole of Romford, right, you'd be sure that a few thousand people are going to die. Yeah, innocent people, right? So the whole of Gaza has been levelled, right? So let's look at it sensibly. Stop, we're talking like mad people, you know. Think about it.
Adam, respectfully, I can't believe that your view on this is we don't believe the figures. But Adam, hold on. Okay. Adam, you talk about wearing the shoes of the figures. They are out there desperately calling for Donald Trump to intervene, based on everything I've seen, saying, can you please help him remove this poisonous regime?
Donald Trump is poison himself.
Well, you may think that, and sure, there's plenty to criticise him about, but at least he hasn't murdered 2,000 of protesters on the street.
What about the woman that was his own citizen that was murdered by
ISIS? It's such a what about argument. The video of the woman who was killed by an ISIS agent is deplorable.
The woman
and it's
dead.
Exactly. And it's shocking.
In back. But and before
but Adam,
Biden
you can do
power,
two things at the same time.
Power,
Adam.
People did not die. Because he was not bringing into COVID.
Well, firstly, that's not true because three people on average die across the US each day as a result of police.
Well, they tried to stop all this gun proliferation, but Trump wants to carry that on.
But Adam, you can criticise Donald Trump for his domestic policy, and there are a number of people who would do that, whilst people in Iran are still calling for him to do something.
Well, I'm not calling for him to do anything.
I'm curious, what have you seen that's happening in it? So there's no murder, there's no one calling for regime change, they're all happy with the Ayatollah, are they? With Iran, that's now 1.47 million to the dollar.
Hold on a second, right? The reason that is the case is because we put sanctions on them.
Oh,
right? Those sanctions are only there, right, because it's a power play, right? Rather than actually sort of saying, look, let's get round the table. Let's do what the British do. Get round the table.
Hold on.
Down with these
Adam,
people.
We had the Iran nuclear deal, and they were still enriching weapons-grade uranium.
Well, they weren't. And they were using it. They weren't using it for weapons. They're Muslims. They don't want to kill people.
What are you on about? They were enriching uranium to a point where it was weapons grade. Yes, okay, they enriched other uranium for nuclear plants, for example.
Henry, the 12-day war that happened, right, if they were enriching uranium and doing nuclear whatevers, how come they didn't lob them all into Israel? They didn't, because they don't want to kill.
Because it clearly wasn't finished, and also the US bombed them during the 12-day war.
Even if they had nukes, they would not do it because they love the Palestinians that are there.
I can't understand why you are shilling for Iran.
No, you're shilling. Right, I don't know who you're shilling for.
I'm worried about people being killed on the streets of Tehran, Isfahan.
You couldn't give a damn because. Okay, so which is worse, 2,000 people or 70,000 people?
Adam, you can think both, but they're separate foreign policy decisions, right? We're talking in this instance about the leader who is killing people on the streets.
2,000 people or 70,000 people? Which one is worse? You tell me.
Adam,
you don't have any value for the Palestinians.
Well, let me hold on. That's not fair. Don't tell me what I feel.
Well, it's obvious.
Well, it's not true at all. If you listen to me on LBC, of course I am extremely... I mean, concern doesn't even cut it. The number of Palestinian people who've been killed is obviously shocking. It's obviously unacceptable. You have to accept, though, Adam, there are different situations. In that, for example, look, we don't know... partially because they're not allowed journalists in, fine, but we don't know how many are working for Hamas. We don't know about where Hamas operate because they haven't been clear on that. Have you hung up?
No, absolutely not.
Right, sorry. Sorry, I didn't
hear your point.
Right.
It matters not, right? The whole point is this is a regional sort of struggle, right? And for my mindset, right, what you need to do is remove Netanyahu, remove the guy in Iran, I don't even know his name.
Ayatollah Khamenei, yes. Because
both of them can't lead.
Okay, but Adam...
Both of them can't lead.
Yeah.
And leave
Netanyahu to one side, right? I'm sure... Well, no, but
why?
I'm just... Well, no,
it takes two.
Because, no.
Two kids are fighting in the playground.
Adam, I'm saying leave him... Adam, I'm saying leave him to one side because I understand your point on Netanyahu, right? And I think whenever there is an election in Israel, I suspect he's going to be roundly defeated and his coalition's already collapsing. Hold on. But on Khamenei, how is that regime going to fall? There are fewer and fewer people out protesting because they have seen their friends, their loved ones being killed. So how is that regime going to be changed? It's not.
I hear what you're saying. Now, I have a work experience, a work colleague who went out to Iran. Yeah, within the last year, he went out there with his mum. And he came back and he said, what a beautiful place.
Yeah,
he said, you can leave your car doors open, nobody steals things.
Well,
Adam,
please don't give
everything
me an advert for holidaying
expensive.
In Iran when they've just killed 2,000 protesters. Give me a break.
Well, no, this was before the protests, but he went there before the 12-day war, and he said it was a peaceful place. So,
well, they've locked up two British motorbike riders, haven't they?
Removing the sanctions, right, is a start. We need to start pushing forwards peace and not war, not stealing oil, not carrying on in this rubbish way, selling weapons. We need to stop it.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciated. Adam there in Romford. We don't agree, but that is what LBC is all about. So really interesting to hear Adam's view on that. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. We'll continue to discuss Iran. Also,
the way the deal would work is that the prices that the NHS pay for drugs, the price tariff, would be increased to give American pharmaceutical giants more money. We just don't do that. Now, obviously, there might be a reaction from the White House. Bring it on.
Davies speaking earlier today. We'll speak with the Lib Dem MP next. Plus, it's just been announced there will be a new Birmingham to Manchester rail line planned by the government. We'll be speaking with the Mayor of York later on about that. 10:31 is the time. Let's get the news with Matt Hewitt.
The government's just announced it wants to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. It would relieve the West Coast Main Line, but we're told it would not be a reinstatement of the cancelled HS2 scheme between the cities. Donald Trump is being briefed on options to bring an end to the killings in Iran. At least 2,000 are thought to have been killed in the anti-government protests, but one report puts the figure six times higher. There's confusion over Sakir Starmer's plans for mandatory digital IDs to prove people's rights to work. There are reports that other forms of documentation, such as passports, will still be valid, but the Home Office ministers told LBC there will be mandatory digital checks. LBC weather. Patchy rain lingering in the southeast tonight, but clear elsewhere. Lows of -2. Wintry sunshine across the south tomorrow, once cloud clears in the southeast. Turning breezy, cloudy and wet in the north and west by the afternoon. Highs of 5 to 10 degrees.
LBC, coming up on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast, Donald Trump promises help is on its way as he tells Iranians to keep protesting. So what will the US President do next? Nick is joined live by the Shadow Foreign Secretary, Dame Priti Patel, and the Chief International Anchor for CNN Global Podcaster, Christiane Amanpour. Plus, the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, announces that the government intends to build a new rail line between Birmingham and Manchester. All of that and much more coming up with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics.
with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Have you ever felt like your investment advisor is giving you an off-the-shelf retirement plan? That they just want to put you in a box? But who wants that? At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a box. We create a plan that's just right for you, because it's only right for us if it's right for you. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Henry Riley. Text 84850.
10:34 is the time. Matt says, no one will shed a tear for the Ayatollah, Henry. Half the country support him. That's a few people. If you believe that, Matt, then you believe anything. I mean, do me a favour. They're killing protesters in Iran. Of course you're going to have some people saying they support the Ayatollah because they're worried about being killed. Plus, Matt, half the country's fled in recent years. Well, in recent years, over the course, ever since, really, the Ayatollah was... or the Shah was deposed, really. So this idea that half the country support the Ayatollah, where are you getting that from? There are a couple of pro-government demonstrations where clearly they were sort of put up to it. David's in Bayswater. Hello, David.
Yeah, oh, hi, Henry. Nice to speak to you again.
And you too.
So, hi. So basically, I think it's a zero-sum game for the Iranians, because if they fight against the regime, they're going to be killed in possibly tens of thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands, because the Iranian army is 610,000. The IRG is 190,000. So you can imagine this regime is trapped and it's going to fight back viciously. Mm. So and if they don't do that, they're trapped under these sanctions that America's placed on Iran, which has ruined the economy and which is making their lives desperate. And that is what this recent rebellion has been framed as basically a civil rights rebellion. But it's just as much an economic, it's a rebellion, yes, against the economic. So they really have to find a way of avoiding these two scenarios. So maybe possibly try to get the present leader Khomeini out and get a more moderate leader in somehow. But I think the prospect of them rebelling against rebellion is too horrific, Henry. It's going to be a bloodbath, honestly. And all this rhetoric from President Trump saying we're going to support you, that's just ratcheting up the whole thing and making it worse.
But in fairness, though, David, people in Iran are calling for Donald Trump to step in because they feel helpless. They're being killed on the streets.
Yes, but they've been pushed into a corner. Don't you know, Henry, if you look at the history of Iran, in 1954, when they overthrew the democratically elected leader, they installed a puppet, the Shah, and then the American oil companies got 50% ownership of the oil. So they extracted money from Iran for over 30 years. And then the Shah, when he got a bit more powerful, he got a better deal with them. But this is what frames the relationship with America, is this history of exploitation. And that's partly why the regime in Iran is so anti-American, because they've seen a history of exploitation. But my main point is to say we have to avoid bloodshed. If you're a mother or a father, do you want to see your son or daughter die? No. If there's a middle way, even if it's not perfect, it's better than seeing your child die, isn't it, Henry? We cannot allow Trump to dominate the airwaves with his rhetoric of war.
But David, people are being killed at the moment. So you can't say there's going to be bloodshed. And we've seen 2,000 people die in the space of few weeks.
But we've seen nothing yet. If the regime feel they're actually going to be ousted, if the threat becomes even bigger, they're response is going to be far more violent. It could have been worse
than even
now.
And then what do we do
as
the West?
Well, I think what we need to do is explore more with, I don't know, I'm not a great diplomat, but try at least to give it a bit more time to see if the pressure now on, they might overthrow Khomeini, an internal coup maybe, and replace him with a more moderate guy who will speak to the protesters.
This is Reza Pahlavi, who is the exiled Crown Prince. David, thank you. Always nice to talk to you. David there in Bayswater. James, coming to you in a second. 0345 6060973, the number to call. First, though,
this deadly corridor crisis isn't befitting of the heroic doctors, nurses and other health professionals who work in our NHS. It's not what we expect from our NHS. And it's not what we pay our hard-earned money in taxes to fund our NHS for.
Back to domestic matters. That was Sir Ed Davey, the Lib Dem leader, laying out a plan to make 6,000 hospital beds available by the end of the year, which should be paid for by scrapping the government's plan to add an extra £3 billion a year to pharmaceutical giants to appease Donald Trump, also trying to end the 12-hour A&E waits. Helen Morgan is the Liberal Democrat MP for North Shropshire, who's also the party spokesperson for health and social care. In terms of NHS beds, we've seen a huge decline. Why would adding more help that?
In our accident and emergency departments, we've got 30,000 people a week waiting for 12 hours to be admitted. So, and people being cared for in corridors, which is far below the level of care that we would expect and that the people who work in A&E departments want to give. So we need to come up with a plan to tackle that crisis. Those beds are a mixture of beds, so they're not all in acute hospitals. A large proportion of them are for people who need to be going home from hospital, so they're social care beds, step-down beds, so using up free capacity in the care home system in order to allow people to be admitted into hospital when they need to be. So it's a mixed package of measures with 1,000 extra hospital beds and other beds coming from providing extra social care packages.
I thought it was 6,000 hospital beds.
So it's 1,000 hospital beds for acute care, about 1,200 additional social care beds. There's 1,600 extra hospital beds, and then 1,000 additional capacity beds made up from getting people discharged earlier, getting them, as I say, into the community, into step-down care, so that they're not blocking admission from A&E, which is the critical thing that we need to achieve.
Okay, but so the 6,000 number's wrong, because in all of the copy I've read, it would be 1.5 billion to make 6,000 more beds available each day by expanding hospital capacity. So that's not the figure, is it?
Well, I'd say 6,000 made up of a number of different types of beds.
Right,
so
okay.
If you'll just forgive me looking at my notes, so 1,000 extra hospital beds, 12,000 step-down package beds, 2,500 freed up in order to allow people to be discharged, and 1,600 social care places so that those people can be removed from hospital, freeing up a total of 6,000 beds in the hospital system.
Got it. When it comes to 12-hour A&E waits, clearly that is something that affects many LBC listeners, and we all have experience of family members or people themselves who've been through that. How would you go about eliminating those 12-hour waits?
There's sort of a number of different elements to those 12-hour waits. So the first one is that people can't be admitted when they arrive at A&E. And that's why these 6,000 extra beds are so important, because if there's capacity in the hospital, then they can be admitted. Hospitals are running above the 92% capacity number that the government deems to be safe. And so when you arrive at A&E, if you need to be admitted, there's no room at the inn, and you end up in these kind of undignified and unsafe conditions on a corridor. So the 6,000 beds is really a really important part of that, but it's also around ensuring that people don't get readmitted, so providing better care for them when they leave hospital in terms of understanding their medicines, in terms of social care support being provided until those assessments have been put in place, and providing support to unpaid carers as well, so that people stay as well as they can at home and don't quickly get readmitted because they've been sent home without the support that they need and just end up back in the front door again.
How are we going to pay for this?
So the main way we're going to pay for this is that we wouldn't undertake this deal with Donald Trump to essentially squeeze £3 billion out of the NHS and give it to big pharmaceutical companies. We think that that is a trade deal that's unhelpful for British patients. We're supported by valued think tanks like the Nuffield Trust in coming to that conclusion, because Donald Trump has essentially empowered those big pharmaceutical companies to say, we want more money. And there's no real benefit in terms of the numbers of drugs that would come to market. It's just taking funds away from frontline services, and it would be a problem for the NHS. We'd redirect some of that money.
Lastly, it's not in your brief, but might I ask you about the government's U-turn this evening that seems to have taken place with regards to digital IDs? They're denying it's a U-turn, but the plans for a mandatory digital ID for workers, we understand, will be axed, will be abandoned. Your thoughts on that, Helen Morgan?
Well, I think we're all getting motion sickness from the number of U-turns the government have made in the last few months. We think it's a bad idea. We've said it was a bad idea to start off with. It costs a phenomenal amount of money. I think the number floating around was about £1.8 billion. We think that money would have been better put into things like providing extra beds in the NHS or maybe frontline policing. There's lots of public services that need investment, and spending a fortune on a compulsory digital ID doesn't seem to be the right priority. So welcome the government U-turn. Can't believe that they thought that was a good idea in the first place.
Well, you are the health spokesperson. Maybe you can give them some motion sickness tablets. Thank you. Helen Morgan is the Lib Dem MP for North Shropshire and the party spokesperson for health and social care. Back to your calls on Iran in a moment and the front pages of the newspapers. It's 10:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A visit by a Jewish MP to a school in his constituency was cancelled after a campaign by pro-Palestinian teachers and threats from parents to keep their children at home. We speak of Damien Egan, the Labour MP for Bristol North East, due to visit Bristol Brunel Academy. Emily in Manchester, let's get you on.
It can be kind of construed as whether he's not been allowed to school because of his religion, which I think is obviously completely, unacceptable.
Kate is in Watford.
The fact that as a Jew he's prohibited from going there because presumably he believes that Israel has the right to exist is absolutely scandalous.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Find me somebody to love.
The Dreams Mega Clearance Event is now on. I bet you beds are excited.
Oh yeah, we're bouncing.
Don't miss up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses.
But don't hang about. You snooze, you lose.
Dreams. Love your bed.
So, you're geared up for this making tax digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, making tax digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
On your marks, get set, go hybrid. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. More oomph than a Friday feeling. And smoother than your last online date. More confidence, more go. In a new hybrid engine with 0% APR representative over 24 months. The new Toyota Aygo Cross Hybrid. Go on. Visit your local Toyota centre. Price from £21,595. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 31st March 2026. Optional final payment indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message Henry Reilly on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60973.
10:47 front pages of the newspapers, The Times. We're going to be talking about this in around 50 minutes, so don't go anywhere. New Starmer U-turn over compulsory digital IDs. Scheme is the government's 13th U-turn or abandoned policy. So we'll talk about that in a little while. They also have a picture on their front page of Irfan Soltani, who is set for execution. He's 26 by the Iranian regime tomorrow because of protesting. It's just unbelievable. The Daily Telegraph goes with the line, help is on the way, so says Donald Trump. They will pay a huge price, the killers and abusers in the Iranian regime, so says President Trump. The Sun, the Inn Reaper. This is, they're going for Rachel Reeves on this. They have a picture of her pouring pints on the front, on their front page. Guinness up 4p a pint. What? Some tipplers will be weaker. Tipples will be weaker. Reeves knew that 5,000 pubs would be hit. Pub drinkers are set to be hit by higher prices and weaker pints after Rachel Reeves' budget, with Guinness going up by 4p a pint. More good news, brilliant. I'll have to properly read that later. The Daily Express, elderly living in poverty could exceed 2 million. The total number of older people living in poverty risks going above 2 million, so say campaigners. The Guardian, help is on the way. Trump calls on Iran's protesters to remain defiant. The Eye paper, a very powerful picture of the fires and the protesters with help is on the way once again. The Daily Mirror has the rail deal. Labour reveals £45 billion plan for new lines and infrastructure. This is the new rail link that's going to be between Birmingham and Manchester, and we'll be speaking with the mayor for York later on about that. Last few front pages. The Financial Times, help is on the way. Trump tells Iranians, we get killed if we go out. They have a quote from one protester that they have managed to get in touch with. The Eye paper, again with rail. Labour promises new rail links for the north, but not until the 2030s. Again, it's a lovely announcement, but when is it actually going to happen? The Metro, Russian captain did nothing to avoid US tanker. A Russian ship captain did nothing to avoid a collision with an American tanker anchored in the North Sea that killed one of his crew, court has heard. And the Daily Star, Arctic troll, with the president posing a picture of him glazing at Greenland through the White House windows. James is a first-time caller in Fulham. Hello, James.
Hello. I think I just wanted to say that some of the previous callers might have missed the fact that while this is the killing of the protesters absolutely appalling, Iran has a wide network of state sponsoring of terrorist groups across the region. And many of those groups are already in some form of conflict with the US, the Houthi rebels, or as an example. And so any reaction from the US is likely to consider that and degrading those capabilities. I mean, historically, the US, when Iran has gone too far on something like this, they've created some form of containment strategy. You know, they did a strike on the general in 2020.
Soleimani,
and they've gone after their enrichment facilities before. So any reaction would likely be proportionate and to put them back in check, I would say.
Mm. And that's a good point. You're right. I mean, Iran has been the biggest state sponsor of terrorism for many years. They fund Hamas, they fund the Houthi rebels, they fund Hezbollah. And that is not a country that we can do business with, clearly.
Yeah, absolutely. And those type of things are not hearsay either. You know, it's straight facts that this is a pretty appalling regime that that the US can't allow to kind of get out of check in the medium term. It's not someone that you can negotiate with either.
Mm. Quite. Well, I agree with you there. What do you think help should look like, James?
I think it will probably come in the form of quite targeted strikes in the way that the US has done previously, or going at some of their networks, so it's less direct as well. But without congressional approval, I doubt that they'll be able to do anything particularly extensive. It'll probably be quite isolated, is my guess.
Thank you. James, a first-time caller there in Fulham, just down the road from me in Putney. John is another first-time caller. He's in Bexley. Hello, John.
Hi, Henry. How are you?
Yes, good, thank you, sir. What would you like to say?
So, reasonably speaking, I don't think American troops and generally NATO troops on the ground is a great idea. Like Afghanistan and Iraq, it will end up being a bloody war with many casualties and billions in cash we don't have. If I was Trump and I wanted to support them, what I would do is I'd give weapons, give intel, and give training with troops like the Green Berets, who are American special forces who are trained to teach insurgents. If they want to fight, let them fight and support them. But I think American troops on the ground is a bad idea.
Mm. Well, I think troops on the ground would be separate from targeted strikes, though. You're also nervous and wary about that, are you?
Well, we saw what happened with retaliatory strikes in Qatar, and who knows where else they decide to strike. So strikes, perhaps not as great, but I think giving weapons, intel and training is the best solution.
Okay. If the US does intervene, what do you think the UK should do?
I'd say not, but being realistic, we'd probably follow through like the rest of NATO.
Mm.
But it also depends on whether it's like a Venezuelan operation where they grab the Ayatollah within 3 hours, or whether it becomes a more long-term war with Marines landing on the beach and paratroopers dropping out of planes. But if I was Starmer, I wouldn't want to intervene as much. I think we have a lot bigger issues in this country than within Iran.
Okay, thank you very much. John there in Bexley, 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. Last chance to have your say on this with regards Iran. Of course, many of my colleagues, I imagine, will be returning to it. We also will be. What you think help should look like when Donald Trump says help is on the way. 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. Amir's a first-time caller, another one in Muswell Hill. Hello, Amir.
Hi there, man. You good?
Yes, good, thank you, sir. What do you want to say?
Yes, actually, before back to my point, because it's with the Iranian majority, everyone's very confused about how the Trump want to act. That's what for me is like 4 days. We had 4 days. Unbelievable has been all of the internet shut down in the country. And this is absolutely unbelievable. And even more than 12,000 people has been dying. And I think, of course, definitely Trump can be helped. And one of the help, actually, he can actually attack for a cyber attack for all of the, actually, the nuclear Sepah regimes, that means the fake army in Iran, and that means the run of all of the missiles and everything. That means for me is one of the biggest challenge we can challenge of the regimes. Even in the 12 days, even with the Israeli attack in Iran, exactly the same thing happened in Iran and completed all, get them completely very innocent as naive.
I don't quite follow. What do you mean? What do you think is going to happen?
That means about the cyber attacks. That means if they all completely can block all of the anything they can access to, how to send off the missiles and anything to abuse other foreigners, this is one of the best options. We can attack it, and we need it actually to Trump.
Well, that's interesting. And that wouldn't be the first time. I mean, Iran have been behind cyber attacks themselves as well through proxies they funded. But you think that would be something that the U.S. are weighing up, do you think?
Of course. I think because Iranian people don't want anything like a bombing on Iran. Iran is a massive country. And to me, actually, if they are thinking it's kind of like a war going on in Iran, like anything like attacking as like a bombing and stuff, and this is getting kind of a good excuse to the government to assault it even more sanctions and more kind of pushing the Iranian people as the innocent, that means for me is kind of a cyber attack, one of the best options
Trump
can do.
And I think also another good option would be information. We need to get information into Iran because clearly they have no internet.
Absolutely. This is one of the, actually, I'm struggling actually, even my mom, my dad, my sister, and my brother, even living in Iran, and more than 5 days now, completely, we can't get any communication with them in Iran. Absolutely none of them, none of them.
Where are they? Whereabouts?
My brother living in the Kish, and other parents living in the Tehran, that is the capital, and there is no any communication. Even it's still everyone thinking, oh, is it with it? Some help going in Iran, but it's still absolutely everything cuts and everything shut down.
Mm.
And this is absolutely disaster. And I hope and hope and wish every minute we are waiting, something comes up from Trump, actually, to say that something's been changed or attacked.
Well, and I think, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I think something is imminent. And clearly that is what President Trump is hinting at. He's just returned to look at the numbers of people who've been killed, he was saying earlier on. Thank you, Amir. Quickly to Lucy in Birmingham. We haven't got a lot of time, Lucy, but what did you want to say?
I know. I always come in at the end. There has to be a bigger emphasis on peace. Stay out of other countries and their conflicts. Look to our own interests and get people round the table and talk. Innocent people are dying.
But Lucy, they don't
needlessly.
Want to talk. They don't want to talk with the Ayatollah and the mullahs in Iran.
Who doesn't want to talk?
But the people who are doing the killing.
Well, they're killing their own
protesters.
Country people.
Yeah,
the protesters. Well, you know, it's... you don't need to bomb them to get them to conform. You've got to get dialogue going.
Well, I just don't know if the Ayatollah Khamenei is up for dialogue, to be honest. Lucy, thank you very much for your call. We're going to move on. Coming up...
This government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work.
Not another one. The government accused of U-turning, this time rowing back on mandatory digital ID. Staying with domestic matters...
We know that in the north, particularly investment into large infrastructure projects, into transport, has been poor for so many decades.
That's the Mayor of York, David Skaith, as the government announces a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester, but we don't know when it's going to be. You'll hear my full interview with him, and...
You can leave your hat on.
Take it off!
You can leave your hat on.
Why on earth would you follow a trend to take your trousers off on the tube, and should it be allowed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. In the last hour, the government's announced it wants to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. It would relieve the West Coast main line, but we're told it would not reinstate the cancelled HS2 line between the cities. The link would be built after Northern Powerhouse Rail, which would improve east-west links. The North East Mayor, Labour's Kim McGuinness, says this is huge.
The North has got more potential than I can even say, but... The railway is one of the things that's holding us back, particularly those links from, you know, the northeast through to York and then across to Greater Manchester. It needs sorting out and it needs urgently sorting out, and that's what's happening now.
The Conservatives, who scaled back Northern Powerhouse Rail twice while in power, say the scheme risks being endlessly redesigned and downgraded under Labour. Donald Trump has told Iranian protesters that help is on its way as he urged them to keep demonstrating. He spoke before going into a briefing on the situation in the country.
Iran is on my mind when I see the kind of death that is happening over there, we think. So we're going to get some accurate numbers.
Officials in Tehran say 2,000 people have been killed, though there are reports that's an understatement. Sir Richard Dalton, former UK ambassador to Iran, told LBC some of the options that may be being put to President Trump now. I'm sorry, let's... In fact, the computer's frozen, I'm afraid. So that concludes the news bulletin. I'll have more at half past.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Check in, see if Matt's all right. Thank you very much. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. 2 minutes after 11 is the time. What was it Brenda in Bristol said? Not another one. This is the 13th government U-turn, so say the Times, and we can have a sort of debate as to whether you think it is a U-turn or not. But this idea of digital ID, and it seems to me that basically Keir Starmer was never sold on this idea from the start, because he announced it the Friday before conference, didn't make a massive song and dance about it. I remember reading... this shows how sad I am, but I was reading Pat McFadden in the Times, who'd been to Estonia to see how they do digital ID, and clearly he was a fan of it. He's managed to persuade the Prime Minister, but he didn't really seem to me to be full-throttled behind the policy, and didn't even mention it in his conference speech that took place A few days later, the Times and other outlets, including Politics Home, reporting tonight that Keir Starmer has abandoned his plans for mandatory digital ID for workers amid concerns it will undermine public trust in the scheme. The Prime Minister had announced that digital IDs would be compulsory to verify someone's right to work in the UK. Instead, they'll be optional when they're introduced in 2029, with workers given the choice whether they'll use that or other documents to verify their identity. If it's to crack down on illegal working, then why would it be voluntary? I don't quite understand how that works. After your views on this hour, 0345 6060973, the government maintained that the compulsory element was stopping the conversation about what digital IDs could be used for generally. That was a government source. Let's hear first. This was on the same day, by the way, that the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, said this about U-turns at the Institute for Government.
Feedback is the breakfast of champions. We love to hear it. And if people think we're getting it wrong, then we think that they're right, far better to do the right thing rather than to spare one's political blushes. In the NHS, we have an initiative called GERFT, Get It Right First Time. That should be our New Year's resolution for 2026. Let's try and get it right first time.
Well, how's that going then? Earlier on, the Migration Minister, Mike Tapp, was slightly flummoxed when he was put on the spot when this story broke. He was speaking with Andrew Marr.
Why do you think those plans are going to be abandoned?
They're not being abandoned. We very much, I think you're talking about the mandatory checks on digital ID for working. Now, those digital checks will be mandatory. That has not changed.
So there are reports that there is going to be a big change on this. Can you tell us what is going to change?
Well, there's a lot being discussed behind the scenes, but I'm very clear on this. There will be mandatory digital checks for work, and that will help. For example, the employer that I met earlier, who had previously had to deal with a fraudulent passport they didn't know was fraudulent, so that will get around that sort of problem.
And when will those mandatory checks come?
Announcements will come in due course, but we said before the end of this parliament.
And for the rest of us, as it were, is it still the case that by the time of the next election, we will have digital ID cards and we'll be expected to produce them or not?
The ambition is to have mandatory work checks, which will be digital, by the end of this parliament, yes.
So there will be absolutely no U-turn on digital ID, so far as you're aware?
So as far as I'm aware, no.
As far as I'm aware, no, so says the Migration Minister, Mike Tapp. Remember, Keir Starmer did, at one point, make a big song and dance about this. This was him speaking in September.
For too many years, it's been too easy for people to come here, slip into the shadow economy, and remain here illegally. Because, frankly, we've been squeamish about saying things that are clearly true. It's not just that it's not compassionate left-wing politics to rely on labour that exploits foreign workers and undercuts fair wages, but the simple fact that every nation needs to have control over its borders. We do need to know who is in our country. Our immigration system does need to be fair if we want to maintain that binding contract that our politics is built on. Otherwise, it undermines trust, undermines people's faith that we're on their side, and their belief that the state can and will work for them. And that is why today I am announcing this government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work by the end of this parliament. Let me spell that out. You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID. It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that, says Keir Starmer. Aggie Chambre is LBC's deputy political editor. Is it as simple as that, Aggie?
No, it's no longer as simple as that,
right.
Put quite plainly. So tonight it has been revealed by Politics Home and the Times and now confirmed to us at LBC that effectively the government is rowing back on that compulsory element of digital ID cards. So digital ID cards will still exist, but they will not be mandatory. So it is simply not as simple as that, as the Prime Minister said just then. The government is very, very keen to point out that they are still committed to mandatory digital right to work checks, but not that being the specific mandatory digital ID. it's not that clear yet exactly what that will look like. But I think it is really, really worth noting that Sir Keir Starmer made the case there. He made that argument. It was the Friday before Labour Party conference. But when was the last time you heard anyone else making the argument for it? And actually, it came as a bit of a shock that Friday before Labour conference, because people hadn't what's called rolled the pitch for the policy before that point. And I think that is part of the reason why it very quickly collapsed in popularity among the public. So falling from 53% in popularity in June to just 31% in October. And we simply just have not heard ministers going out and making the case for it. And I think that has led to a lot of worry among Labour MPs, including up to minister level as well on that front. And fundamentally, this is just an argument that the government decided they didn't want to make or did not make. And now they have decided to U-turn on that key part of the policy that it was going to be mandatory. Funnily enough, their 13th U-turn since going into government. Quite the number in just 18 months.
But in that speech that I just played there from Keir Starmer, as you say, it was right before Labour Party conference, he makes very clear that this is about immigration and this is about clamping down on, in particular, illegal working. Now, if it's not mandatory, then people will be asking the question, what is the point of it?
What's the point? Yeah, I think that is completely right. And actually, there are lots of people who think that a digital ID card could be very, very useful for other things. But that was not the case made by the Prime Minister. The case made by the Prime Minister was this. This was about deterring illegal immigration and making it harder to work illegally in Britain. And I think it is also worth noting that there is a huge amount of frustration about the number of U-turns that has happened, 13 since they came into government. And worth, I think, quoting Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, just this morning, Henry, who was speaking at the Institute for Government conference in London. He said, in the NHS, we have an initiative called GIRFT. Get it right first time, he said. That should be our New Year's resolution for 2026. Let's try and get it right first time. Well, this time, Henry, they have not.
But it's incredible, and you're right, and the Independent wrote it up as Wes Streeting says that this should be the end of U-turns, and then you have this. If I could ask you, Mike Tapp, who is one of the immigration ministers, was speaking with Andrew Marr, I played it earlier on, and clearly he wasn't briefed. Are they not marching some of their most senior MPs up to the top of the hill and then just leaving them up there? And they end up having to be asked questions about U-turns when it's been briefed, as you say, to the Times and to Politics Home.
Well, I mean, it's probably worth saying we don't know how the Times and Politics Home got that story. Perhaps it just hadn't got down the chain. But it's worth, I think, looking at the fact that Mike Tapp, who is an immigration minister, and yes, as well, you know, this isn't his brief, but he has posted on social media since that interview with Andrew Marr that I think you just played, saying, calm down, digital right to work checks remain the intention. The exact detail of the digital ID is in development and will be at public consultation soon. And talks about it being an exciting opportunity to make our lives easier. But he basically appear to rule out a U-turn happening in that interview with Andrew Marr just minutes after the Times had put up their copy. But yeah, as you say, it doesn't help the idea that it is chaos behind the scenes.
Sorry, just on that, Aggie, lastly, if the government say, the headline is that the government have rowed back on the flagship policy of mandatory digital ID, but then Mike Tapp and the government spokesperson both saying we remain committed to mandatory digital right to work checks. Are they? I don't understand what the difference is.
Well, okay, so the difference seems to be that mandatory digital IDs are one thing, and those will no longer be mandatory. So we could still sign up to have them like a sort of NHS app, right, where we have all of our information on our digital ID that's on our phone. And that would be one way that we could show that we had a right to work in this country. I guess are suggesting that there will be other digital right to work checks.
Right.
We are not clear what those are at this stage. Perhaps that will become clearer soon.
Let's hope so. Aggie Chambray is LBC's deputy political editor. So Luke Sullivan, who was political director to Keir Starmer until July 2024, is now director of public affairs at Headland, the consultancy. Thank you very much for joining us, Luke. Is this a U-turn? I know you're plain speaking enough to tell me either way. Is it a U-turn?
Evening. Thank you for having me. I don't think it is. I think it's a tweak to the policy. Now, ultimately, the only people who get to judge this are the public. And I think, frankly, for the public, as long as they think the government are in the right position, I think they'll be happy and pleased. I think listening just to your conversation with Aggie there about what the government are saying, from what I understand the position, they are compatible, and Mike Tapp has been caught, you know, unaware. What I think has happened here is, as ever with government, that there are loads of different things going on at once. And this story's come out through the excellent journalism of somebody, I think it was Tilda at Politics Home and then Max at the Times, yes, who have published this story. And I think the news has come out in an uncontrolled way. And therefore, I think it's caught them slightly on the hop.
Well, I note that, but Wes Streeting with this lovely acronym earlier, GERFT, Get It Right First Time, which I'm sure is easier said than done. But on the
day, to live your life by.
Well, yes, quite. But on the day he says that, to have, as you put it, a tweak, if not a full U-turn, why can't we just announce policy when it's ready?
Look, it's a very fair question, and I think the government, everybody wants the government to succeed and to get these things right. I think there was a surprise, I think, when this policy was announced just before conference. I think it was the back end of September at a sort of international leaders of the left conference in London, that there was very sparse detail. And I think this has been one of these issues where the government's argument for this policy, and frankly, I think the benefits of digital ID, whether or not it's mandatory, and the government have made clear, I think, today that it's not going to be mandatory in the sense of people being forced to have digital ID. I think there are huge benefits for people to have it. But I think what they're seeking to do, and I suspect it was not their intention for this to come out in this way, was to basically take one of the barnacles off the boat and frankly sell the policy to the British public for their benefits of the policy. And I think we are quite far behind other, you know, developed Western economies, countries where our public services aren't digitized, that we have to have different logins for different systems. I think there is a huge benefits for this. And I think the government actually realized that this is a policy that is attractive, that there are huge benefits to us as a country, but that frankly the focus on this area of the mandation was frankly, you know, was a problem and was an unwanted distraction.
Do you think Keir Starmer was ever that in favour of digital IDs? I don't know if he ever mentioned it to you when you were his political director, Luke, and the fact he didn't mention it in his conference speech, and we've heard little about it since, does it suggest he wasn't really that invested in it as a policy idea?
I mean, this is an idea that has bumped around various governments. Look, the last Labour government, I introduced a form of national ID. And I think fundamentally, I think where the best place to try and sell this policy is on the benefits for people. And I think, frankly, that's why we've seen this tweak. And I think some of the questions asked about how would digital ID help illegal immigration were reasonable questions to answer. Actually, what I think we're going to get to, and we obviously need to see and wait what the Home Office and the Cabinet Office, there's just been a new government minister sort of put in charge of coordinating this across government. But, you know, there are ways of proving your identity digitally using your passport. I mean, I know when I started my job last year, I had to prove my identity and I wasn't added to the payroll until I do it. This is a really useful thing. I think what the government are talking about is digitizing the system so it's not a paper-based system like so many of our systems are.
So it would be, it wouldn't be a digital ID, but for all intents and purposes, it would do the same thing. So it would be sort of a visa or a passport that you could prove it and do that online instead. Is that the general idea?
Well, I think there are two separate things going on. I think there the government are clearly going ahead with digital ID, and they're going to announce a consultation on that. Separately, I think they're digitising the systems that you have to use to prove that you can work. It sounds from the briefings and trying to put the logic together that the digital ID will still be a form of proving you can work in the UK, but it won't be mandated.
Yes.
But separately, and I've done these on other things, and there are apps that do it where you basically scan your passport and that joins up with the Home Office systems to prove that people have to work in the UK, which is already a legal requirement.
In terms of the narrative on this, Luke, and this idea that this is the 13th U-turn, and look, we saw significant changes when it was the inheritance tax for farmers. We saw last week when it comes to rates, when it comes to pubs, for example, business rates on pubs and hospitality. Are they in danger of becoming a bit of a laughingstock and the party of U-turns?
I think fundamentally, U-turns don't fundamentally matter unless... unless they're U-turning something that's negative. I think there is a danger when the ongoing narrative becomes that that's the thing that you do. And I think that's partly why it's important when there are changes of policy that the government explains why they are. Of course, you know, Wes is right. Everybody should aim to get these things right first time, but yes, that's not life. And I think the public understand that. You know, the key is when you know you need to make a change, make it quickly and, you know, okay, do it full-heartedly and don't have to come back and tweak again because you didn't do it properly the first time.
You do sort of John Maynard Keynes, when the facts change, I change my mind. But these are crucial. This is a crucial year, as you know, Luke. Lastly, we've got these elections taking place in Scotland, in Wales, in across London and various other councils. They do have to get control of this narrative, you'd accept. Otherwise, this is stories like this on the front of the Times are not exactly going to endear voters, are they?
They are difficult, and at the moment the narrative is that this is a Labour government that's struggling, and you know there is a danger that a narrative around U-turns build. But I think what we have seen in this first couple of weeks, and I think we saw at the back end of last year, was to try and clean some of the barnacles off the boat and to try and focus much more on the cost of living. There's a huge story that the government have briefed into tomorrow about Northern Powerhouse Rail, which is a huge story, and I suspect that is what I think Heidi Alexander's up tomorrow morning would like to have spent her morning focusing on. But that's, you know, the world doesn't always work like that, and they have to be able to do both things at once. But, you know, I think the government are absolutely focused on trying to prove, you know, that this is the year of delivery that they're delivering for voters, and that, you know, the key thing the voters care about is the cost of living and, you know, have they got more money in their pocket?
And on that, later on, David Scaife, the Labour Mayor of York, will join me to talk about, as Luke was just saying, that new Northern Powerhouse Rail or Birmingham to Manchester rail line. Luke, thank you for your time. Much appreciated. Luke Sullivan was former political director to Sir Keir Starmer until July 24. He's now Director of Public Affairs at the Headland Consultancy. I don't really want to get too bogged down into the digital ID on this because clearly they've changed it. But really, that's what I want to focus on. The government have changed their mind. Now, when they do change their mind, are you sitting there thinking, well, once is a virtue, twice is inconvenient, but three times is a bit of a joke, 13 times shows a spineless government? Are you pleased that they are changing policies when public opinion changes, as when some of the facts become clearer? Or should they actually follow what Wes Streeting has been advocating and try and get it right the first time before they announce it to the public? 0345 606 0973, the number to call. It's 11:21.
This is LBC.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Hiya. Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The government has dropped plans for mandatory digital ID to work in the UK. This was hugely controversial when it came in. You would have been mandated to have a digital ID. Now, that's not going to be mandatory, because the government say stepping back from mandatory use cases will deflate one of the main points of contention, and this is the crucial example. We do not want there to be a risk of being cases where there's some 65-year-old in a rural area being barred from working because he hasn't installed the ID. Are you grateful the government have U-turned on digital IDs, or do you think this shows a rudderless government that doesn't know which way it's going and seems to blow with the wind? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. I said this to our guest earlier on, Luke Sullivan, just before the break. There are crucial elections this year. It's a crucial time for the government. I mean, Keir Starmer's fate could well be decided by how people, how you go and vote, if you are one of those fortunate enough to vote. I am, actually, being in London. But his fate will be, could be, decided by how you vote in those local elections. When you hear Keir Starmer and this Labour government once again changing their mind, changing a policy, you can say they're improving the system, they're tweaking the system. And yes, of course, we don't want to see a 65-year-old in a rural area denied the right to work. But when you come out and you make this massive song and dance that digital ID has to be compulsory, everyone who is opposed to that, and there was a lot of opposition on LBC, I seem to imagine, you were calling up saying, well, hold on, I don't want a mandatory digital ID. And you were effectively gaslit and told, well, no, there has to be a mandatory digital ID. We can't do this any other way. It has to be done in a mandatory fashion, otherwise it won't crack down on illegal working. Well, how come, what's changed since September to January, whereby we're now told, oh, you know when we said it was mandatory? Don't worry, we're now going to sort of change it and you can have a sort of passport already. We had all this in the first place. So if it's not mandatory, what is the point of the digital ID? And I want to hear from you this hour. When you hear the government say that they are dropping these plans, they're changing these plans, how does that make you feel? Will that, and these other U-turns, 13 of them now, so say the Times, when you hear those stories and you count the number of U-turns, does that really decide, does that really change how you are going to vote come what may? Or maybe even the next general election, if you thought that far ahead. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. You can text 84850. Or ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. Are you thankful that the government have changed their mind? Do you think it's more a case of John Maynard Keynes, as I quoted earlier on, not to be too pretentious, but when the facts change, I change my mind? Or is this starting to look a little bit like Groucho Marx, to give you another quote? Those are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have others. Frieda is in Coventry. Hello, Frieda.
Hello, young man.
Young man, there we go. What did you like to say?
Well, I'd like to say that with all these about terms, we never ever hear how much of taxpayers' money is spent on developing the ideas and then the cost of cancelling them.
I don't think you'd want to know, to be honest.
Well, I think I would, because it isn't their money, but the way they spend it, you'd think it was Santa Claus's.
Do you think, I mean, it seems to me, Frieda, I don't know which way you vote, but it seems to me strange that we have a government that has outsourced an awful lot of policy to reviews and to committees and to inquiries, and yet when they do announce a policy that hasn't been through that process, they then can't make up their minds and they end up changing the blooming thing.
Absolutely. I don't have a particular preference regarding voting. I'm certainly not particularly Tory or Labour or anything. I judge people on their merits. But as you say, or again, as I said, I wonder how much money, taxpayers' money, is wasted that could be used on something constructive. And again, why on earth would you announce something when you don't even know what it's going to end up being?
Well, quite. How do you assess this government? I mean, we're told this is the 13th U-turn. I have to say, I haven't been able to sort of verify that, although I doubt the Times. I mean, I think the Times would look at all sorts of different changes. But we have seen, I mean, winter fuel, pensions. We've seen benefit claimants. I mean, how do you assess the current state of the government, Frieda?
Certainly not impressive, and they don't seem to be able to do the basics before they make a decision. I don't know if that sums up an answer.
It does. And, I mean, lastly, do you give them any credit for changing their mind on this or not? If it's not working, we are where we are.
Well, I would suggest that everyone looks back at the first U-turn they did to do with pensioners. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to come out with 30 seconds after you've been elected.
The winter fuel payment you're referring to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've basically cancelled that. It's about as much of a U-turn you can do without reinstating the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, all right. Not impressed.
Well, there we go. Heard loud and clear from Coventry. Thank you, Frieda. Appreciate it. Frieda there getting us started. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Is this one U-turn too many for the Labour government? Does it change your perception of how they govern, how they are doing in government? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. And if you were an opponent of digital ID, or certainly mandatory digital ID, are you relieved that this government has decided to drop the very nature of it being mandatory? Come back to your calls on that in a moment. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. Coming up after the news.
The North has got more potential than I can even say, but the railway is one of the things that's holding us back, particularly those links from, you know, the northeast through to York and then across to Greater Manchester. It needs sorting out.
That's the North East Mayor, Labour's Kim McGuinness, saying the new rail development in the North is huge. We'll be getting the perspective of another Labour Mayor in a moment. I'll be joined by the Mayor of York and North Yorkshire, David Scaife, after the news, which at 11:30 is with Matt Hewitt.
Ministers have announced they want to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. A previous plan to run HS2 between the cities was scrapped by Rishi Sunak's government to save money. Donald Trump's calling on who he says are Iranian patriots to keep protesting following widespread loss of life in anti-government demonstrations. Here, the Iranian ambassador has been summoned by the foreign secretary. And there's confusion over whether digital ID cards for workers will be mandatory. Despite reports to the contrary, a Home Office minister told LBC they'll still be introduced to prove a person's right to work in the UK by the end of this parliament. LBC weather. Patchy rain lingering over the southeast tonight, but clear elsewhere. Lows of -2. Wintry sunshine across the south tomorrow, once cloud clears, turning breezy, cloudy and wet in the north and west. Highs of 5 to 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
So, you're geared up for this making tax digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, making tax digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD.
Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This Wednesday, the Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dreams Mega Clearance event is now on. How are you beds holding up?
We're built for this.
Don't miss up to 40% off a range of stylish beds and comfy mattresses.
Don't get caught napping. Shop now.
Dreams. Love your bed.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:32 is the time. Right, let's get straight to your calls on Digital ID. Manesh is in Southall. Hello, Manesh.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
I think, you know, it's very unwise to think of this just as a political debate where, you know, the worst that can happen is your voters don't vote for you for the next round of elections. Mm. I think this goes further deeper than this because it's a lack of confidence in the government. It's basically giving the open view to our opponents. Let's imagine a country wants to invade us and send missiles towards us. They're going to think, well, hang on. The Labour government's going to first put it out to a think tank, then they're going to make a decision, a policy decision, then they're going to have to think about it and then do a U-turn. Mm. It just makes us sitting ducks. It doesn't make sense.
Well, they will argue, though, that, look, they are still in favour of a digital ID. They just don't want it to be mandatory and they've listened to people and they want it to work well. Do you give them any credence for that?
Not really, because the whole purpose of this debate about the ID was to stop the immigrants coming and working, and this does this does nothing to stop that. Because if it's voluntary, it doesn't make any difference, does it?
Well, that was my view, although they do say there's now going to be digital checks, so it's going to be either a digital ID or some form of other digital check. The point is, we were told this would be very simple, and it would be some sort of digital ID card, and there we go, nice and easy, whereas that now is not going to happen.
No, I think it goes even further deeper than I initially thought. But the fact is that they're using the immigration debate as an excuse to slide this one through the net. And once they get it through, they're going to make it difficult for other purposes. So if you want to open a bank account or other things you want to do, it will restrict you under your human rights of a British citizen to do that, which is what the whole point is, I think, of all this.
How worried were you then by the digital ID announcement? Because it sounds like you're not in favour of it.
Well, I don't think there's any need for it, because if you're legal here and you've got a driving licence or a passport, which is necessary anyway, we have enough. If you get stopped by the police, you give your name, they run it through, do a PNR check on you, and they find out who you are anyway. So I don't think it's actually necessary. It's just more paperwork and more bureaucracy that they're shoving down us.
Thank you, Munesh in Southall. Michael says there's a difference between being a listening government and being a rudderless government with no vision for the country. The reason that this government falls into the latter camp is because of a lack of scrutiny from the media. Can you do an apology on behalf of the mainstream media for not scrutinising Starmer and co? Well, I mean, they scrutinise every day on Nick Ferrari's show, Minister, but thank you, Michael. Abby says, Trump tells Iranians to remain... that's with something else. And Alex in Crystal Palace, Alexandra says, is the government simply U-turning or is it in fact listening and learning? I haven't been a fan of many of Labour's knee-jerk decisions in the last 18 months, but this constant barrage is ridiculous. Do you really want to go back to the last Tory administration squandering taxpayers' money on whims and forcing political ideology, no matter what the public think. Hamid in London says Starmer is the most unprincipled, spineless prime minister in modern history. He's so devoid of basic principles, he's effectively a shell of a human being. A carrot has more of a soul than this man. His legacy will be sycophantic, obsequious lackey to Trump. Hamid, well, tell me what you really think, Hamid. And Alistair says, I would respect Starmer if he just stood up and said, I know I will not be popular, but this isn't a popularity contest. I'm mandated to move this country forward, and that is what we will do. We look weak as a country now when we need to be showing unity and leadership, says Alistair. More calls in a moment. Judy, you'll be first. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. Are you celebrating this U-turn? If indeed you think it is a U-turn, are you cutting the Prime Minister some slack when it comes to this, even if you disagreed with other previous decisions? How are you responding tonight to this idea that the mandatory part of mandatory digital IDs is to go? Are you celebrating that news? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. First, though,
A new Birmingham to Manchester rail line is planned by the government. As you've been hearing in the news bulletins with Matt, the government has announced its intention being a crucial word there, to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. There was a previous plan to extend HS2 between the cities of Birmingham and Manchester. That was scrapped by Rishi Sunak at the Conservative conference in October of 2023 to save money. The Treasury now says it wants a new Birmingham to Manchester rail line, but that it would not be a reinstatement of HS2. Earlier on, I spoke with David Skaith, who is the Labour Mayor of York and North Yorkshire, and I asked him firstly for his reaction to this announcement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be said, it's a tremendous announcement. We know that in the north, particularly investment into large infrastructure projects, into transport, has been poor for so many decades. And to see this confidence that this government has in investing in a large infrastructure project into transport, into the north, is incredibly welcome. It's something that we've been calling for a long time, and to be able to be on parity now in the north and actually have that investment coming in is going to be key for so many communities, especially in places like York and North Yorkshire.
It does seem rather vague, though, the promise. I mean, there's no timescale on when it's going to be built. We know it will be some point after Northern Powerhouse Rail, which we don't even know when that's going to be built.
I mean, we're in that process now where we've developed a White Rose Rail plan with the South and West Yorkshire Mayor, myself, and obviously having that plan that we've put together for rail. And obviously, Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham over the other side of the Pennines have also developed a similar plan, which is this phased approach to actually how we're going to bring the investment into our areas, into rail and into these large infrastructure projects, but also having it in that phased approach. So it is going to be a long-term project because these projects of this scale are going to be that way. But I think it's a realistic way of doing it rather than asking for loads of money on day one. We've actually had this phased approach where it's going to be a lot more realistic to be able to deliver this project.
But, I mean, if we look at Northern Powerhouse Rail, that's not scheduled to be built until, well, it'd be in the mid-2030s, you'd imagine, at the very earliest. If this is going to be built after that, we're looking at 2040s, aren't we? I mean, I'm sure you'll be re-elected many times, David Skaith, but you might not be the mayor by the time this comes in.
No, I mean, what I'd say to that is it's why we've developed the plans and we've had these conversations with government for quite some time now, is actually having this phased approach. We all know, particularly, for example, in my patch in York, we have York Station in York Central, which is one of the biggest brownfield development sites in the country. That project is up and running now. So bringing this extra investment into NPR, into the north, into infrastructure projects to support projects like that that are already happening to make them even better, these projects are happening now. And this is why we've got this phased approach. But yes, there will be some projects will be coming through in the 2030s and 2040s, but there are projects in place like mine that are happening now that can be ramped up from now.
But again, when it, I mean, the government has announced its intention to build a new railway line. I mean, I completely understand why in your patch it is completely needed and you will be championing this. And I completely appreciate that, Mr. Mayor. But what I would say is when the government says it's their intention to build it, it'd be nice to have something a bit more concrete, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that is the work that we're doing now. Like, as we said, you know, we have both sides of Pennines drawn up our long-term plans for rail and into wider transport infrastructure projects for the next 10, 15, 20 years. We've done it that way in that phased approach to understand that there are going to be some smaller, earlier wins that can be developed over the next year or two. And there are going to be projects that just do take that longer period of time. We know that large infrastructure projects do that. There's a lot of moving parts that need to come into place, and actually having that phased approach, why it's really good though to have these announcements and to have this funding coming in and having these plans, is we know that when intentions are there to go and do this work, it brings in excitement, it brings in that further investment, because people know things are going to be happening. So the work that comes in now will start feeding to that work that will be developed over the next 5, 10, 15 years.
The route between Birmingham and Manchester is undoubtedly two points in the country that need to be better connected, and for a long time has been promised and nothing has happened. This sounds an awful lot like HS2 though, doesn't it? That extension where it would have gone from Birmingham to Manchester.
I would say it doesn't, and I would say because this has been born out of people on the ground, it's been born out of mayors, it's been born out of us feeding into government. This is not a top-down approach, government telling us what's going to be happening like we see with HS2. This has been born out of mayors particularly developing their plans, like I said, I have with the South and West Yorkshire Mayor, like Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham have as well. We have drawn up our plans that we know that we need for our communities to grow our economy, to connect our people that so badly need that in the north. And that's why this is very different to things like the traditional HS2 plans we saw from government, which were top down, no thought, no long-term planning. This is complete opposite of that.
And what is the experience, lastly, Mr. Skaith, of your constituents in York and North Yorkshire? I mean, in terms of when they get on the train these days, have they seen any improvement in recent years? Because I know, for instance, if you look at the West Coast Main Line, we know that that has been heavily in the news, and there's a lot of pressure on that particular service. I note that this would ease pressure, certainly, when it is built. But your experiences that you hear from your constituents?
Yeah, I mean, we know that, say, investment particularly and into transport improvements in the north, particularly in places like mine, have been completely forgotten about, have been poor. For us, north to south connectivity, say York to London, is pretty good, but it's that east to west connectivity that's been terrible. And actually further north out of York, North Allerton and up into the northeast has been really poor. So having this work, particularly improving and expanding the capacity of the East Coast Main Line, which is a challenge that we face over on our side of the Pennines, is valuable, which is why the work at York is so important. But it also strengthens our case to improve the connectivity between York and our coast, which again has been incredibly poor and hasn't been invested and improved for too long. So York really is the centre of so much of this east to west connectivity, plus that north-south connectivity, and improving that is absolutely vital.
David Skaith is the Labour Mayor of York and North Yorkshire. This from Paul says, with regards to the... Oh, by the way, you might have views on that if you're in Birmingham or Manchester. Do let me know if you are welcoming this announcement, or, as I was saying to Mr. Skaith, I mean, lovely announcement, new Birmingham to Manchester rail line, then you look into it, well, it's only going to happen when Northern Powerhouse Rail is built, which is going to be in the 2030s, so what, this is going to happen in 2040s, and it's their intention to build it, so not even a sort of commitment, and no timescale is going to be provided. Other than that, it's good to go, oven ready, as Boris Johnson would say. Judy's in Colchester. Hello, Judy.
Hello there. Oh,
you sound exhausted, Judy.
Oh, I just, you know, it gets, I said to your young lady on the phone, when I listen to LBC, which I do a lot of the time.
We like hearing from you.
Well, thank you. Sometimes they announce something that they're going to do, and it just makes me laugh, and I usually shout at the radio, and give them what for. The cat just looks at me and walks out the room. But
cat's name, please?
Daphne.
Daphne? That's nice.
Daphne, yeah. She's only got 3 legs and half a tail, but other than that,
she's good to run a marathon, yeah. so you're sick of these U-turns, are you, Judy?
Yes, I mean, there's an arrogance about this government. You know, they play fast and loose with us. I don't know what game they think they're playing, and it's their arrogance to think that the general public are going to fall for these things now. You know, when I was out today, I was helping in a facility in a local seaside town for the homeless and what have you that I do. And, you know, there they are. There are the people that, you know, need help. And we get promises that they're going to do something, they're going to end it. It never happened. We still haven't had an end to the post office scandal, have we?
Well, in terms of people being paid, yeah, quite.
I always remember when Nick Ferrari was on Question Time.
Oh, yes.
It's well over a year ago now, but it was when there was another fiasco going on with the water companies, and he sat there and he said, well, if it was up to me, he said, I'd have a lot of them in prison. And he got the biggest round of applause I've ever heard at Question Time. You know, they want to have a face-to-face meeting with the head of the water company where this is all going on in Tunbridge Wells and that. My goodness me, you know, they should get themselves down there and bang some fists. You know, as you and I are talking now, unless something has happened and it's been put right, there's people sitting there with no
water. I remember I was sent down when I'm reporting for Nick in December to go and cover that. And the fact it's happened again to the same households. I mean, it was unacceptable the first time. Now you just think, well, what? Something has to happen here.
There can be no prevarication. It just has to happen. It's about time. Another Nick Ferrari thing, when he bangs his fist on the table and says, up with this, I will not put. You know, nothing's improving in our hospitals. You know, people in corridors, what are they doing? Putting in more telephone points, and more electricity points, and social care. I mean, there was the young lady was on this morning from the Liberals talking
Daisy
about
Cooper,
what,
yes.
Daisy Cooper, yeah, Mitch, pretty yep. lady. Yeah, she was, well, she's a lady, I think she is. She
yes, she is. Yeah.
Yes, she is. Yes, she always looks very nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, what she was saying this morning was true. But that was true and should have been done years ago. And let's be honest, the Liberals are not likely to be getting in any time soon to actually start doing what they plan. And I just despair sometimes. And, I say, in the end, I mean, and that's... So much time is taken up with talking about Donald Trump, and I really don't have enough room in my head to worry about him as well. And I just, you know, what do you think?
Well,
you
we're
know?
Only 2 weeks into the year. We're not even two
I
weeks
know.
Into the year.
I know.
All right. Well, has Daphne been fed?
Yes, she's been fed and watered. She's on the bed with me now.
All right, good. Well, I hope you both get a good night's sleep. Thank you. Judy there in Colchester, along with her pet cat, Daphne.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
The death toll in Iran mounts to almost unbelievable proportions. Will Donald Trump now intervene, as he has threatened to do, to protect the protesters against a regime that is becoming increasingly desperate and increasingly bloodthirsty?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Message Henry Riley on WhatsApp now. 0345 60 60 973.
John, coming to you in a second. Firstly, we're talking about this digital ID story. This because the government has done a partial U-turn, call it what you want. They've changed their mind. They've rowed back on their flagship policy of mandatory digital ID. Earlier on, I spoke with Helen Morgan, who's the Lib Dem MP for North Shropshire. She's their party's health spokesperson, and she gave me her reaction. It's not in your brief, but might I ask you about the government's U-turn this evening that seems to have taken place with regards to digital IDs? They're denying it's a U-turn, but the plans for a mandatory digital ID for workers, we understand, will be axed, will be abandoned. Your thoughts on that, Helen Morgan?
Well, I think we're all getting motion sickness from the number of U-turns the government have made in the last few months. We think it's a bad idea. We've said it was a bad idea to start off with. It costs a phenomenal amount of money. I think the number floating around was about £1.8 billion. We think that money would have been better put into things like providing extra beds in the NHS or maybe frontline policing. There's lots of public services that need investment, and spending a fortune on a compulsory digital ID doesn't seem to be the right priority. So welcome the government U-turn. Can't believe that they thought that was a good idea in the first place.
Helen Morgan speaking with me earlier on, the Lib Dem MP. Last chance to have your say on this. 0345 6060 973, the number to call. John's in Chippenham. Hello, John.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. What made you pick up the phone?
This idea of mandatory cards.
Yes.
ID cards. It's not a policy.
What do you mean?
When was it ever put up as a government policy?
When Keir Starmer said that it was coming in, mandatory digital ID.
He doesn't
ID.
Make policy.
What do you mean?
You get policy in manifestos.
Yeah, but
there's nothing in the manifesto about it. So where are you getting the idea from? The Times.
No. But he announced it in September that there was going to be mandatory digital ID.
He announced that was a direction of travel. He never said it was a policy. Nobody ever championed it as a policy.
He did. He said by the end of this parliament we'll have it.
Yes, it's never a policy. It's never been put to the vote. It's never been. There's never been a green paper, white paper, anything. It was something he said in his speech. If you took what Mr. Farage says in speeches and what he lays down as a potential policy,
you're rewriting history here, man.
Turning all the time.
But John, Keir Starmer literally said we're going to have digital ID.
Farage literally said before the referendum, we're going to be far better off outside the EU. So,
John,
I mean, that's not a policy either.
John, you can't come on here and say that Keir Starmer is telling, it has never said this, and then I tell you he has said it, and then you just start talking about Nigel Farage.
Well, I can, because that's what you're doing. You're saying it was a policy, it never was.
What do you mean? But governments do things that aren't in the manifesto.
So
what makes something a policy? If Keir Starmer says, tomorrow we're going to increase free school meal places, which they have done, is that a policy?
It was in a speech. That's not a policy.
What do you mean? Hold on, John.
If he says
John,
it in a speech,
be honest,
it doesn't make
right.
it policy.
This
policy is what they
John,
vote on in Parliament.
John, listen to what Keir Starmer said.
And that is why today I am announcing this government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work by the end of this parliament.
That was Keir Starmer. I mean, that's not a policy.
No.
What? He's just said he'll do it by the end of this parliament.
Yeah, but it's not a policy. You have to vote on a policy. It has to go through Parliament. It has to be a bill.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
But it's still a policy.
So,
what do you mean? But it's still his intention.
It's not a U-turn if it's never actually laid down as a directional policy.
By that, then, nothing has been a U-turn.
Well, I've got to say that the number of U-turns that Farage has put in over the years just says it doesn't
but that's interesting. But that's
speeches.
Interesting, John, because you've now said that it has to be voted on to be policy. So how can you accuse...
It was never put down as a policy. It was
so
never in the manifesto.
So give me an example of a Nigel Farage U-turn, then, if we're just talking about policy.
Well, he put down sort of at least 3 points before Brexit, for instance.
Go on.
Said everything was going to be far better.
But that's not a policy, John. That's a speech.
Well, that was a speech you're talking about.
Keir Starmer's the Prime Minister. Nigel Farage was leader of
Nigel Farage
was leader of UKIP.
Prime Minister, and he's done more U-turns even beforehand. So,
but
no,
give me
I'm
one then. If it's
because
but give me a U-turn then, John.
Because it's a headline in tomorrow's paper, which is a Murdoch paper, which is basically anti-government.
No, it's not. It's in Politics Home as well, and it's been confirmed by the government.
Yeah, well, Politics. Where do they get it from?
It's been confirmed by the government, John.
It hasn't been confirmed by the government. They haven't said anything about
it. Yes, they have. Let me tell you what the government line is, John, seeing as you're so interested in that. The government have commented saying, we've always been clear that details on the digital ID scheme will be set out following a full consultation. It will make people's lives easier. They've confirmed on background that it will now not be mandatory.
Well, there you go. The consultation's over.
But you've just said
direction is... the direction never was. It was a consultation, maybe. They put the flag up the pole, seen how many salutes it's got, and decided it's not quite going to be worth doing.
John,
and before they even got it off the ground, they said that Tony Blair's son was going to be spent loads of money on a contract to build a computer for it. That was a nonsense.
That was
story
nonsense.
Too.
Yeah, it was fake news, which got broadcast on Would You Believe
It?
That
might be fake news as well, because it was never a policy.
No, because they've just confirmed it on background. But, I mean, Have I Got News For You, you'll recall, published that absolute nonsense about you and Blair. They somehow allow that to go out on their programme, which I've got no idea how that happened.
Well, and now you say it's going to affect the outcome of the May elections. You don't even know what the result was or is in May. So you're kind of just
taking up a non-story for a non-policy,
making a non-phone-in about it.
John, Keir Starmer made a speech on the eve of his conference about bringing in digital ID. I didn't make a thing out of it.
He did
by taking journalists there.
It wasn't a policy.
You're being a complete idiot. Of course it's a policy. If he announces he's going to do something and he's the bloody Prime Minister with an 80-seat majority... John, grow up, mate. If he's the Prime Minister with an 80-seat majority, of course it's policy.
It's not policy.
Oh, grow up, honestly. Stephen's in Sunderland. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, yes. Well, I actually think it was quite a good idea to have it. I think he's buckled under pressure. Okay, fair enough. But he's doing the voluntary route. And I think all the organisations like banks and renting places and any organisation that requires to needs to establish who you are, they will say, we really prefer you to have the digital ID, but
yes.
Hey, give us your passport. So I think we get it through the back door.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that is. It will certainly be encouraged if it's not mandatory, won't it?
Yeah, all the organisations, like today, I'm in the throes of buying a house, and I had to show them my passport and all that kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, well, when this digital ID comes in, that they'd ask that as preference. They'd say, well, we prefer that, but hey, you know, if you've got the paper stuff, well, okay, it's still legal.
Okay.
It'd be like cash, you know, cash or credit card. You know, do you pay in cash or credit card? Well, take credit card.
Mm. Yes, I think you're probably onto something there, Stephen, actually. Thank you. You have the last word on that. Look, I think, John, why quibble over semantics? If the Prime Minister announces something that he's going to do by the end of this Parliament, it's not like he said it at some point in the future, it'd be great to have a digital ID. He said, by the end of this Parliament, we'll have mandatory digital ID. Or are we just supposed to, any time the Prime Minister makes a speech, we're supposed to say, well, let's not talk about that because he may well U-turn on it. Absolute nonsense, right? We are going to move on. Thank you for your calls on that. Coming up,
there are so many risks that have been raised that the fact that this is still being treated as a straightforward planning issue rather than a national security issue.
Labour MPs call for the Chinese super embassy to be blocked ahead of their leader, the Prime Minister, visiting Beijing later this month. And
I just thought, why not? You know, like, do something different, push myself a bit.
I guess I don't get nervous. I guess I enjoy a bit of the attention as well.
I love it. It's so cheeky. It's so English. Like, not illegal, but pushing the envelope a little bit. I like it.
It's so cheeky. It's so English. Those are people who have partook in no trousers tube ride. Londoners stripping down, taking their trousers off and riding the tube. Should that be allowed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, the government's announced it wants to build a new railway line between Birmingham and Manchester. It would relieve the West Coast Main Line, but we're told it would not reinstate the cancelled HS2 line between the cities. The link would be built after Northern Powerhouse Rail, which would improve east-west links. Labour's Oliver Coppard is the mayor of South Yorkshire.
We've had very frank exchanges behind closed doors, as you would expect, about what South Yorkshire needs and deserves. South Yorkshire's brilliantly placed. We've got a really fast-growing economy now, and we need to unlock further growth through better transport investment, and that's exactly what I've told the government.
The Conservatives, who scaled back Northern Powerhouse Rail twice while in power, say Labour is lurching from review to review and deadline to deadline. Donald Trump has told Iranian protesters that help is on its way as he urged them to keep demonstrating. Officials in Tehran say 2,000 people have been killed at anti-government rallies, though there are reports that's an understatement. Sir Richard Dalton, former UK ambassador to Iran, told LBC some of the options that may be being put to President Trump.
Most likely bombing of security force facilities, government centres, maybe an attempt to kill the Iranian leadership. It could be that he's moving too late. These appalling killings have had their effect in keeping people at home.
It's understood the government has backtracked on plans to make digital ID cards mandatory for workers. Ministers had said the IDs would be compulsory to prove the right to work in the UK by the end of this parliament. Now it seems that existing paperwork will continue to be accepted, although a Home Office minister said the digital IDs would still be mandatory. Luke Sullivan, the former political director to Sir Keir Starmer, thinks he can explain the confusion.
What I think has happened here is, as ever with government, that there are loads of different things going on at once. And I think the news has come out in an uncontrolled way, and therefore I think it's caught them slightly on the hop.
The leader of Kent County Council is backing calls for the head of South East Water to resign over outages. Around 25,000 properties are facing supply issues for a fourth day following Storm Goretti. The Commons Environment Committee have asked the company's chief executive to appear before them again. Its chair is Lib Dem Alistair Carmichael.
We've heard of people whose kidney dialysis was not capable of being done properly. Some dreadful stories of businesses being denied the proper compensation, and the individual human stories have been absolutely horrific. But it's always somebody else's fault.
South East Water has apologised. LBC weather. After a clear night, except for some patchy rain in southeastern England, wintry sunshine across the south for Wednesday, turning wet in the north and west, highs of 5 to 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
It's past 12 is the time. Good morning. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Look, clearly John and I weren't going to agree on that. I know there's people texting in, so I would just say, look, maybe I lost my rag with John a little bit. I think he was a bit hung up on the semantics. It's just irritating where you can't get into the policy discussion because we don't agree on whether it's a policy or not. It's so frustrating, but I wasn't intending to be rude to John, so apologies if I've been too shouty. Ben Kettish will be back next week, you'll be pleased to know. Yes, we are going to move on from that, and John is more than welcome to call in any time. Always nice to hear from him and to speak to him. We're going to completely change pace this hour and talk about something which, when I first heard about it, I thought was weird, and I haven't really massively changed my mind of it. There are now, and by the way, this is happening in London, but it's going to be across, I want to hear from you across the UK, because ultimately it's happening on British transport, and so I want to know whether you think it's something you'd like to see spread, because ultimately it's spread to London, and so there's no reason why it wouldn't spread to a town or city near you. There are now calls to ban a traumatic no-trousers tube ride event. This has seen Londoners stripped down to their underwear in front of shocked families and tourists, and it's not even being done for charity. Now, this has been an annual event in London for nearly two decades. It sees passengers riding the underground with no trousers on, leaving tourists and families bemused. But calls are now growing for the no trousers tube ride to end amid fears that it's causing unnecessary trauma for those who've suffered sexual assaults, for example, on the network. The event was held on Sunday, having first arrived in the capital as an import from the US in 2009, and it follows the first no-pants subway ride in New York, which took place in 2002. There's been some concern for some time with people saying this shouldn't happen on the tube. Ryan Coogan, who writes for The Independent, said, "It turns a normal commute into an anxiety-ridden ordeal, not least because the tube is often packed tight with people, meaning your chances of accidentally making physical contact with someone who is pantsless is absolutely going to skyrocket. Look at pictures of previous years.
They're sat in seats, desperately trying to avoid looking at eye-level tighty-whities. Women do take part, but the vast majority of participants appear to be male, which can be a huge problem for women, so says this columnist. A Reddit post about the event has also prompted much discussion in recent days. One user wrote, "The No Trousers Tube Ride is embarrassing nonsense, and it absolutely stinks of the 2014 moustache and bacon internet." I don't actually know what that means. The era of forced, quirky humour, where people thought wearing silly props and doing dares counted as having a personality. Nobody wants to see your crusty underwear in public. Now, this year, participants gathered in Soho's Chinatown, not many miles away from here, actually. I'll have to be careful on my walk home. From 2:45 p.m, before heading down to the tube and stripping to their lower half, right down to their underpants. This was started in 2009 by the Stiff Upper Lip Society, which is a flash mob group who organise it each year, apart from during the pandemic, where they took some time off. Since then, the organisation for the event has been taken on by group member Dave Selkirk, who is a personal trainer from South Africa. He ran it on Sunday, and we can speak with Dave now, who is organiser of the No Trousers Tube Ride. Thank you for joining me. Why do you do it?
It's an event that I find very, very, well, a lot of fun. I did the first time I did it and joined the next year as a group leader and then took it over when the original organizers decided it had run its course and wanted to end it. But it is just such a fun environment and fun event. So that's why I take part and organize it.
How many years has it been running for, and specifically for in London?
Its first event was in 2002 in New York, and its first event in London was 2009. It's run every year except for 2021 and 22 because of COVID.
Right. How many people typically do it?
Every year it's got bigger and bigger. This year we had around 400 people.
And do you all get the same tube, or do you get different tubes at different times of the day? How does it work?
We all meet in Chinatown, and then we split into various different groups and head out on different routes. The idea is that we all meet across platforms and so on through various routes on the tube network.
And then do you meet up again afterwards to sort of talk about how it went?
Yeah, we meet at a pub after the event. We only ride for about 2 hours.
Got it.
But it's always fun to have a debrief and a chat and a social gathering afterwards.
Be honest with me. Do you come across people who are irritated or who are annoyed at what you're doing?
I've seen a lot of irritation online. There's a lot of negative comments and posts. But I would say 99.9% of reactions face-to-face and on the tube itself are overwhelming excitement and laughter and joy.
And what is it? I mean, is it done for charity, or why do we do it?
There is no other reason for doing it other than pure enjoyment and pure fun. I always say that it's one of the few things we're very privileged to be able to do something that is just for fun. There's no underlying meaning or a hidden agenda or open agenda. It is just for fun.
And it's very cold at the moment. I mean, are you bringing trousers with you to the platform and then stripping off, or how does it work?
Yeah, it is freezing outside, so we all meet in trousers. We all walk down to the platform in trousers and get onto the train in trousers. And then on the first ride, when the doors close, that's when we all take our trousers off.
Oh, so physically on the tube?
Yeah.
Right. Why don't you do it in sort of July when it's slightly better weather?
That would make much more sense because it would be much warmer. But people wear such tiny little shorts on the tube in summer anyway. You wouldn't sort of stand out. People wouldn't know any different. So in winter, the bare legs rarely show up because everybody's so wrapped up.
You said that there's been some criticism online, and I did look before we were speaking, and I did have a look. And one of the words that comes up is weird. They say that it's weird that you do this.
I agree. I think it's personally, I do love standing out, and I think we have a mixture between extroverts who want to stand out, maybe even attention seekers, and then another group of people who are perhaps bucket list checkers who want to do something very different from their usual personality. So I think it is out of the ordinary, and that's possibly a description or a meaning for the word weird. But I don't think that's a negative word. I don't think weird is a negative word.
Well, sure, and clearly you get enjoyment out of it and you think it's fun, but there will be people who will say, well, if I'm on the central line with young children, I don't want to see Dave's sort of boxers or his pants. And low. I mean, but they will say that's not appropriate when it's in front of someone who's a bit younger.
Would those same children go to a beach?
Possibly. But they sort of prepped for it on a beach. I mean, if they're trying to get to school on the central line, they might think, why the hell is the man opposite me not wearing trousers?
It is very different to be happening on the tube. The tube is a different place to a beach, I agree. But nobody's going to school at 3 o'clock on a Sunday.
Sure. So you've got no issue with parents who are worried about this, some of which who've expressed their concerns online. You think it's, what, manufactured, or what do you think of some of the criticism?
I think you can choose to take offence to somebody in their underwear, but I think that is a choice that you're making. I don't think underwear is offensive in any sort of context. Like I said, you'd be much more exposed on a beach.
Yes. When it comes to how you wear your underwear, I've read there's some guidance that's been put on for that as well, about trying to wear it. In a Facebook post, organisers advise those to keep their underpants as normal or low-key as possible, so it looks like you've just forgotten your trousers. Why is that?
Yeah. We do, I mean, as part of that whole approach, we don't want to, I don't see underwear as offensive, but we don't want people in sort of see-through lace underwear or underwear that's specifically been worn because you're going to be riding the tube in your underwear. So we do, you know, we are doing it for fun. We're not doing it to cause offense. So I think raunchy underwear might cause offense, and we don't want to do that.
And is it? Forgive my ignorance, I wasn't travelling on the tube, or I didn't come across you on the tube on Sunday. Is it mostly men? Is it a mix?
There is a mix, but it is, I would say, if I were to put a figure to it, maybe 80% men, 20% women.
And what ages?
We actually had two parents bring their kids, so I think the youngest was 8, and I would guess the oldest was maybe 90.
Right. Mike, so there is quite an age range when it comes to people wanting to get rid of the trousers.
Very much so, yeah.
Do you speak to the police about this beforehand, or TFL? Do you say, hey guys, just a heads up, this is what's happening, or do you sort of surprise them?
In previous years, we have tried to liaise with the police and TFL, and they've not said no, they've just not responded, so we don't reach out anymore.
You'll continue this for next year and many years to come, I imagine. It sounds like it.
Well, the original organisers felt it had run its course. And one day when I turn up with just myself and my megaphone and it's nobody else to join me, then it will have run its course. But while people are still keen to do it and have fun, I'll still organise it.
Well, it sounds interesting. The only other thing I'd put to you is there's in the article that's been written about this, one of them, they quote a columnist from The Independent who says it turns a normal commute into an anxiety-ridden ordeal, not least because the tube is often packed tight with people, meaning your chances of accidentally making physical contact with a trouserless stranger skyrocket. That is a fair... I mean, if there is a busy tube carriage, would you think twice about getting on?
Yeah, I mean, when we boarded for the first time, it was a very busy tube carriage. But we don't hold back. We do get on. Again, there are various things that cause anxiety. Traffic causes people anxiety. We can't stop traffic to stop everybody's anxiety. If things like that do cause you anxiety, I would have thought you'd be anxious whether people are in their pants or not. Just a busy tube would cause anxiety.
Right, OK. Thank you, Dave. Dave Selkirk is organiser of the No Trousers Tube Ride. Are you offended if people get public transport in this country and they don't have trousers on? It is allowed. Should it be? 0345 6060973, the number to call. I get if it was for charity, if it was for a particular type of cancer, or if it was relevant. But that he literally said, Dave, that they do it because they sort of like attention and they don't think it's an insult to be weird. Fine. Is it harmless fun, as some are saying, or is it a little bit more sinister than that? What do you think? 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
When you're cozied up on the sofa, when the drama's got you totally hooked, when you're completely engrossed in what's about to happen. Hey, did you eat all these?
Oh, sorry, didn't notice.
Go on, there's more in the kitchen. Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can make the most of those long, dark nights. Search TV licence together.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car instead of selling privately. We Buy Any Car can get it sorted in under an hour, so no weekends watching randoms inspect your car to not even buy it. If only they could make finding where you park simpler.
Was it floor 2 or 3? I swear I parked here. Where is it?
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Henry Riley on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:17 is the time. What do you think of the no trousers tube ride? It's happening in London, or it just happened on Sunday. It happens every year. What do you think? Is it... Because the text here is quite interesting. A lot of the feedback we're getting so far is that some people think it's disgusting and shouldn't be allowed, and others think it's brilliant and that we're all getting a bit snowflakey when it comes to people expressing their own right to sort of do what they want. I'm torn. I think, sort of first and foremost, it's a bit bloody weird to do it, let's be perfectly clear. But equally, is it also a bit harmless? What do you think? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Adam in Uxbridge says, have you ever taken your trousers off for a ride on the tube? No. C says, no trousers on the tube is an act of gross indecency. Is therefore a criminal offence. Well, it's not actually, weirdly, because they're just wearing their pants. I mean, I suppose you could say, what's the difference between that and wearing a very short skirt or very short shorts? You know, whatever gender you are. I mean, you know, who's going to enforce that? And Brian in Alicante says, this is another example of how the stupidity virus has infected humans. I think you're on the fence there, Brian. May's in Edmonton. Hello, May.
Hello, mate. Hi there. Sorry, I'm saying hello, May.
That's all right. I could be your mate if you want, May. I'm not going to get the tube with you trouserless, though.
Okay.
What do you think about it?
I think they're all sick. I actually think... Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And more so, I think what's even more sicker is when they have the naked bike ride. I think it's in London.
It is.
And Brighton.
Yeah.
Now, there's a time and a place in which if people want to do nonsense, they go and do it. But that guy who was saying about he's an exhibitionist, I think they're all narcissistic people.
He did say that it's about attention.
Yeah.
So why not?
But I don't want to give him, but why should other people be discomfort, have a level of discomfort in order to please his ego and massage his ego?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Do you, if this happened and you were on a, in fact, you do live in London, don't you, in Edmonton, but.
Yeah.
If this happened on the tube, what would you do? Would you ignore them because they want attention?
No, I would tell them off and tell them that they're sick. Exactly what I'm saying. Because people should have the right. There's a level of decency. If you're on the beach or if you go to the gym, you know what people expect to wear. But on the... Imagine, like as he said, he gets on the train. You're just sitting there or standing there and suddenly people start undressing. Do you know if they're going to attack you? Do you know what's going to happen? It's not funny. I mean, they say England is a religious Catholic country. They're doing this on a Sunday, supposedly a holy day. It's a lot of hypocrisy going on.
They say it's a bit of harmless fun. Come on, May.
For them. But if it's harmless fun, do it somewhere where they entertain each other, like you have nudist beaches. If you don't want to be nude, you don't go there. So let them go somewhere where it's for them. But why should other people, that other people's discomfort, give them comfort?
Okay. Thank you, May, for getting us started in Edmonton. Heather's in Goffs Oak. Hello, Heather.
Hello. Good morning, Henry. How are we?
Very well, thank you. What do you think?
I think it's hysterical. I think it's really funny.
Okay. Why?
Why? Because there's so much seriousness in the world and so much things that go on that far worse than this. And actually, it's a group of people, yeah? Am I right in saying it's not just one person,
is it? 400 odd this time.
Exactly. I find it hysterical. I wish I was on the tube.
But what about, I mean, we just heard from a previous caller, May was saying it would make her feel uncomfortable.
Well, that's up to May. May can think what she wants.
But May just thinks she's sitting on the district line from Wimbledon to Parsons Green, and then she's now got to see a load of people's legs that she didn't want to see.
Well, that's up to her.
And they're silly boxers.
But she can close her eyes.
Well, sure, but why should she have to do that? She's getting the tube. Like, why do we need people doing that? I mean, if you want to wear no trousers, do in your own blooming home or do the naked garden. I don't know, the naked garden run.
Henry, my Henry, please.
All right.
It's really funny. You're not going to coax me into thinking anything other than I think it's harmless fun. And actually, I think it's quite hysterical. And it made me laugh just listening to your interview. But I thought you were good at interviewing. You are very good. You're a very good broadcaster. Mm. But you can't coax me into saying anything other than what I think, and that is, I think it's hysterical.
All right, Heather, I'll try no more. Were you ever, were you partaking this ever, Heather?
No, I'll just be an observer.
Right, okay. And you'll be cheering.
I'll be giggling in the corner.
And laughing. All right, thank you, Heather, in Goffs Oak. It really is that simple, by the way. Do you think you should be able to take your trousers off and ride public transport in this country? 0345-6060-973 is the number to call. Andy's in Bolton. Hello, Andy.
Yeah, you've just phoned me up. I just think, to be honest with you, if you chose, like, a Saturday night or something like that when there's no young kids about...
The middle of the day on Sunday.
Oh, I don't know. I don't... Honestly, it's a long time since I've been to London. As long as it's not wearing and drunken and... you know, people, it's just mad. I mean, it's a miserable time, isn't it? And as long as they're keeping their underpants on, I don't really see what's the problem with it, really.
Well, it's a bit weird, isn't it? I mean, people trying to ride the tube, they're sort of coming home from work or from seeing the London Eye.
Right, I was just telling you, I was just watching, actually, a rerun of Cracker, and I did a lot of psychology at one time.
Right.
Now, if you read the Bible, right, all these Christian people, I'm not knocking them, but they're disgusted at nudity. Now, if you read the Bible properly, in the beginning, Adam nicks that apple, and they realise that they broke. So what do Adam do?
And he cut
themselves up. God thinks this is wrong, because I've given this beautiful body and to hide from me. It's confusing. Luke, you know, I mean, we had this thing round here years ago. You probably don't know about mooning, showing your bum.
Yeah. I've never had it done to me, but I know it exists.
Sorry, this is true. This is the early 80s, yeah?
Right.
And I was a bit... bunch of ordinary lads, and I had this bet with this lad that something... If I...
You're a bit of a mooner yourself, or not?
Listen to this. I was actually talking to a young man in a cafe the other day who worked at one... And I'm not going to say which shop it was. I said, if I'm wrong, I'll show my bum in such a body's window on Saturday. Well, I lost the bet. So I did it. And... It was all right with a bunch of lads, and then people started to take it a bit seriously, you know, and we're living in a miserable time, aren't we?
Yes.
And a little bit of foolery now and then. I just don't think it harms anybody. You know, I mean, I'll tell you what, where I'm seeing Lancashire right now, I've got thermals on everything. I won't even take my socks off. It's freezing in the front.
Well, it's a strange time of year to organise it, isn't it? Because it is blooming freezing, as you say.
Yeah, but it's blooming miserable. And every, you get on the radio and tell these bombs here and weapons. You know, people are fed up now.
I know, but why does that mean we need to see them in their underpants?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, you don't want to see me in my bloody underpants, for Christ's sake.
Well,
you know, but it's young people, and it's times are changing, and providing they're not drunk, or, to be honest with you, if it's a Saturday night or something...
Do you think this about the naked bike ride as well? Because they've got everything
well,
out with that.
Well, I've got the album somewhere. Didn't he actually do that, Queen, Fat Bottom Girls? That really happened, didn't it?
Yeah, but, I mean, this does happen, the naked bike ride, every year.
Oh, right, I didn't know about this. It's really, I'm a musician, I'm not really into this, but... like you say, as long as it's not... Really, when there's not children about, other than that, I don't see there's a problem with it, really.
How was your Christmas and New Year, Andy?
Nothing happened round here. I just carried on with my music and just went about things. Nothing, really, to be honest with you. It's like everywhere else, man. It's just dead. It's just too expensive to go out, really. I don't drink anymore, anyway.
Right.
I don't know, it's just quite a genuine call, this, because, you know, it seems, well, I've just been watching Cracker, and that's finished, and I've not put my radio on yet.
Yeah. All right, well, good, Wood. Thanks, Andy there in Bolton. Another Andy says, what's next? They're going to ban passengers wearing shorts. This from Mark says, I haven't seen 400 people in their pants, but I'm offended. It's ridiculous. What a stupid thing to do. Why doesn't he take it to South Africa? Deb in Ryslip says, just turned on, not sure what the underwear thing is, but from what I've heard, it sounds like brilliant fun. Good luck to him. And Andrew in Chelsea says, I wouldn't want to see a bunch of strangers in their pants. I find it distasteful, but the word trauma is overused. I think to call it traumatic is an absurd overreaction, says Andrew in Chelsea. Julius says, from your interview with your guest, sounds like you should be grateful to only encounter him trouserless on the tube. Rather than at the debrief afterwards. You wouldn't, that's a good point. You would sort of, obviously have had a few drinks as well and been half naked for most of the day. You'd be slightly worried, I suppose, wouldn't you? Carmel says it should be disallowed to go anywhere publicly in just your pants. And to think these idiots are travelling the tube in their underpants as adults. How is it fun? I've had funnier root canal work. Well, Jonathan says, all harmless fun. London is full of weird. That's why this city is loved. God, goodness me, people have got opinions on this. And Ernest in Starport says, shame it's not done for prostate cancer awareness. Well, that's true. You could make it into a sort of charity gig, couldn't you? I don't understand why it's not, really. And Chris says, love the idea it's people who strip down to their pants on the tube and they subsequently have a debrief in the pub. Yeah, I'm aware of where we're going with this, and I'm not going there. Thank you for a few people who've tried to prod me in that direction of a debrief. And Steve says, what a pathetic person with a pathetic need for exhibitionism. Get a life and stop harassing people in public transport. They should be arrested. Well, again, they're not harassing people. Marie's in Wembley. Hello, Marie.
Hi, Henry. I've not spoken to you before.
Lovely to hear from you.
It's lovely to talk to you. Yeah, it's highly inappropriate. I'm not happy about it at all. No.
Okay. Why? Because our previous caller, Andy, thought it was hilarious, and it's just a bit of fun. We all need to get a grip.
I mean, but honestly, I'm not a prude. I'm not miserable. I've got a dreadful sense of humour. I laugh at the most inappropriate things, but this is so inappropriate. I mean, for a start, Henry, can you imagine the state of some of this underwear? Have you ever been on a train where you've had a... You know, I've been on the train...
Well, imagine they stick their best briefs on, don't they?
Are they?
Well, I'd hope so. If they're going out and parading them, you'd hope they'd sort of, it'd be the one that's sort of your Calvin Kleins that are ready for this occasion, the black ones preferably.
I'd like...
just to be clear.
I'd like to think that they'll all have Calvin Kleins, but I'm sure lots of them won't. They'll be, can you imagine? Also sitting on the seats with... probably really...
Well, do you know, it's good you say that, because you're right. Also, the tube isn't exactly known for being pristine, is it? I mean, you wouldn't want to eat your dinner off it, hence why would you want to sit and have your legs on it?
Well, I wouldn't want to eat my dinner on it. Henry, I just think it's really inappropriate. I mean, why not have a leggings day where everyone has to wear, say, or a pyjamas bottom day? Why does it have to be underwear? I mean, that's kind of, you know, that can happen. I mean, it's really packed on the tube, you know, you might touch someone's bottom or, you know, that kind of thing.
Or worse, quite. Thank you very much, Marie. Lovely to speak to you for the first time. I hope it's not the last. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. More views in a moment. First, though, the time is 12:30. Let's get the news headlines with Matt Hewitt.
Birmingham and Manchester will be linked by a new railway to take the pressure off the West Coast Main Line. But the government says it isn't a reinstatement of HS2. It'll be built after a project to improve rail links across the north. Donald Trump is warning of very strong action if Iran hangs protesters, with the first due to be executed within hours. Around 2,000 people have been confirmed killed in anti-regime protests, but opposition figures claim the death toll could be as high as 12,000. And there's confusion over whether digital ID cards for workers will be mandatory. Despite reports to the contrary, a Home Office minister told LBC they'll still be compulsory to prove a person's right to work in the UK by the end of this parliament. LBC weather. After a clear night, except for some patchy rain in southeastern England, wintry sunshine across the south for Wednesday, turning wet in the north and west, highs of 5 to 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website, and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
You worry as well that they would be frigid at this time of year, wouldn't you? Because they must be absolutely freezing. 12:32 is the time. Now, we are also a serious news programme at other points, and one big story that I was keen to cover this evening is the calls from Labour MPs to block the Chinese mega embassy. As I say, we'll come back to your calls in a moment. First, though, can speak with Alex Sobel, who is the Labour MP for Leeds Central and Headingley, who has signed a letter expressing his concern about the super embassy's approval. And Alex joins me now. Why are you so concerned about this new super embassy, as it's been dubbed in the press?
A number of concerns. First of all, my committee, the Joint Committee on Human Rights, did an inquiry, a major inquiry into transnational repression, which means the repression of people of other states in your country. China and the Chinese state featured very heavily, whether it was Hong Kongers or Uyghur Muslims or just people who dissented from the line of the Chinese state. There was very clear evidence in so many ways of them being repressed in the United Kingdom by China, including efforts coordinated by the Chinese embassy in its current building. Secondly, the Royal Mint, the Lacasse Royal Mint, is a really crucial area in terms of our national infrastructure, lying between the City of London and Canary Wharf. And we have cables literally metres away from the basement of the proposed new Chinese embassy. And what's concerning about its application in terms of that, in terms of both those things actually, is the basement floors of those embassy plans that were submitted to First Tower Hamlets Council, then went to the government. The plans for those rooms were redacted. This weekend, a newspaper managed to get hold of unredacted copies, and there were items there which were, you know, not really what you'd expect in basement rooms, items of equipment. And so, you know, I'm really concerned about the potential activities or planned activities of the Chinese embassy there. Then on top of that, you know, there are issues around the rights to protest and the way that the plans have been drawn up in terms of the embassy restricting the right of people to protest. And there are many reasons for people to protest against the Chinese government. So there are a whole range of issues. And then also there's, you know, the issue about how the Chinese government operates. For instance, the effectively the phony trial of Jimmy Lai a British citizen in Hong Kong and his detention there. So there's many different things in terms of security and human rights that we should be concerned about.
When you talk about the right to protest, then, do you fear for Hong Kongers, for instance, in the UK or Uyghur Muslims living in the UK?
Absolutely. So a good example is Chloe Chung, who lives in Leeds. She's just 20 years old. Last year, the Hong Kong authority put a $1 million bounty on her head. She's had a number of issues of cyber attacks, of being followed, of letters. And this happened to quite a number of Hong Kong dissidents who've had bounties put on their heads, letters to neighbours about them, whether they were about the bounty or false misinformation campaign. So, yeah, I'm very concerned.
Are the government taking it seriously? Because when this was raised in the House of Commons, the Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, asked for the Security Minister or a Home Office Minister, and the Labour government sent the Housing Minister.
Well, I think in a sense, procedurally, what happened was correct, because it's about planning decision, so you send the minister in charge of planning. But obviously, this isn't a normal planning decision. It's not like you wanting to build an extension on your house or even a business wanting to build a new office. This is a completely different matter. So there's a huge overlap between national security and planning, and that's why the decision was taken away from Tower Hamlets Council and brought to the government, which not only gives it much higher profile, which obviously was a very high profile planning decision anyway, but also politicizes it. Yes. So and then even notwithstanding a decision being made, then there's enforcement, you know, and then there's issues around, for instance, who's actually going to build the embassy. This is going to be British building company. Is it going to be Chinese building company with Chinese labour brought in? There's a whole range of questions that are unanswered here.
When it comes to our relationship with China, we had all of this when there was the case going through the courts about whether China is considered a threat. We know that there are many within government as well, and not just the Labour government, but previous governments who sought to get close to Beijing to forge close economic ties with undoubtedly a huge economy. I mean, as it stands, that sort of balance and treading that line, is that good enough, or do we need to be bolder in calling China a threat?
My view is that, one, it's not that we shouldn't trade with China, that we should have a boycott, we shouldn't, you know, have a sort of regime we have with Russia, absolutely not. But we have to be very clear that that not just about human rights of Chinese people in China being trampled on by the Chinese state, and people might say, not as I'd agree with them, but people might say, well, that's the business of China and nothing to do with us. But they are repressing the rights of British citizens in Britain and British citizens in China. And Jimmy Lai is a good example of that. So it is a much broader thing. So we need to think about this in terms of not effectively either in perception or in reality giving China additional, you know, effectively rewarding China for human rights abuses. That's the line, really, and that's where the government needs to draw a very clear line. And the government say they're drawing that line, okay, but they need to say it and they need to do it.
So that allows Sir Keir Starmer to head to Beijing later this month. Are you totally comfortable with that?
I think that it is actually unconscionable that Keir would go to Beijing while Jimmy Lai sat in a prison in Hong Kong. If Beijing, and they know that this trial was a set-up job, if they want to have a visit from British Prime Minister on good terms, then they need to release Jimmy Lai.
So he shouldn't go, as things stand?
Well, I mean, the condition should be that they release Jimmy Lai if he's going to go. That would be my condition if I was the British Prime Minister.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. But before I let you go, and you haven't been asked to comment on this, so if you don't want to, there's no problem at all. But we have heard in the last few hours, President Trump has said help is on the way with regards to the US and what we are seeing in Iran with the huge number of people who've been killed, 2,000, so say latest estimates. Can I get a word or two from you on that?
I mean, I don't really understand what that comment means, because what happening in Iran is absolutely dreadful. We are seeing hundreds, potentially thousands, we don't really know because internet blackouts, lack of information coming out of Iran, of people being killed by the regime. I want the will of the Iranian people to be seen through, and to be seen through in a peaceful way, which obviously isn't happening. I think the tradition has been that the US and other nations will go and bomb some installations in Iran. I don't think that's going to help the Iranian people at this time, bombing either military installations or key infrastructure, whatever. That's not going to help them. So I'm not sure what help he means, but if it's traditional help, then that I don't think is actually helpful at all.
Okay, thank you very much for your time. That is Alex Sobel, who's Labour MP for Leeds Central in Headingley, who signed this letter expressing concern about this super embassy. Staying with London matters, but very different, we're talking about being trouserless on the tube and whether you think that's a step too far. Tom's in Shepherd's Bush. Hello, Tom.
Hi there.
Hello.
You know, in my opinion is this is just a carnival. It's the fun. And look at this one. If you start making the story, the next thing there will be look like maybe dressing like a spy, old fashioned with the dark glasses and the beard or moustache. Oh, they will be looking like a prisoner. You know, people can change very quickly. And they will put down, I will be suggesting to come in, drop down the pan and sit down. That's what you do.
But there are some people saying, Tom, this is a little bit below the belt.
I know, but this is just a one day a year. So when the carnival. So what about these nice ladies with the dancing, that you know, rumba on the street, you know? And
well, she's not exposing herself.
Well, they are very short, you know, they have good pants, you know. That's what they do.
In Shepherd's Bush, when you get what tube goes to Shepherd's Bush? It's the Central Line, isn't it? No. Is it the Central Line? Yeah.
Central Line.
Don't want to see someone close to their birthday suit while you've just finished work or while you're just trying to go about your normal Sunday. I mean, what would you say if you had these people sitting opposite you?
I would don't say nothing. I would just keep my mouth shut and just thinking about read my paper or something.
Okay. So they're not going to persuade you to do it then?
No, if you don't show them who they are, don't make in the story, they will be dying very quickly. They will be less and less, and then nobody coming one day, and that's it. But it's just a fun. What about red nose? What about, I tell you, I would be happy to go down for the moustache and the glasses spy, Russian spy. That's a good day. Everybody, Russian spy.
Well, I don't know if we want to be joking about that when we got this blooming super embassy and we are told about Russian interference. Thank you very much for your time, Tom. Nice to hear from you, sir. Richard's in Hackney. Hello, Richards.
Hello. Henry, I've looked very closely into this underwear issue. And from what I can see...
Because I didn't want to, but I'm pleased that you've looked closely into this.
Well, from what I can see, if there's a problem, it's a very small problem. I couldn't see anything to really worry us. Especially in this weather, it's not going to, you know, this thing is not going to grow out to all proportions, is it?
What about, though, if it's a little bit below the belt and people are just trying to go on their commutes?
Well, I think if somebody wants to get on the tube and really stand out, that they should be able to. And if I saw those people, I would give them a little wave, and hopefully they'd give me a little wave
back. Do you think they're doing this for attention, or it's something in their genes?
It could be something in their genes. It's probably not entirely genetic. Yes, I don't think genes have anything to do with it, really.
Got it. But just to be clear, you've looked into this very closely, and this and time of year, there's not a massive issue. It's a small issue.
It's a tiny issue. I wouldn't get engorged about it.
Okay. Heard loud and clear. The genius, Richard in Hackney. More calls in a moment.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Pupils have voted to cancel Samuel Pepys due to misogyny, but can't the artist be separated from the art? And the Starmer U-turns for the 13th time, this time on digital IDs. Is he completely devoid of conviction?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
When it comes to retirement advice, the last thing you want is to be put in a bucket. Seen as this type of person, or that type of person. At Fisher Investments UK, we never put you in a bucket. We always tailor retirement advice that's just right for you. Fisher Investments UK. Retirement advice that's as individual as you are. Learn more at fisherinvestments.co.uk. Investing involves the risk of loss. Fisher Investments UK is regulated by the UK Financial Conduct Authority.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website, and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Hillary's huge winter sale is on, and now there's even more savings for the window wise, with an extra 10% off everything until the 2nd of February. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, keep the cold out and the cozy in with free thermal lining on our favourite curtains and Roman blinds. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Back to Case of the Wrong Trousers. Keith's in San Francisco. Hello, Keith.
Oh, hi. Yeah, well, I've been listening to this, but I'm 72 and I used to live in England, and this is pretty, like, since the 70s they've been doing this. I mean,
no, since 2009 they've been doing this.
Yeah, I mean, like, but I do like that when they used to have these people who used to be in an orchestra, say, and they'd gradually walk into a square and start playing their instruments. I mean, that was, I found that more interesting than people in their underwear on the tube.
Getting their kit off, yeah. Do you think it should be allowed?
As you see, I'm from San Francisco, and what goes on in San Francisco will make that look tame. But, I don't think that's appropriate, really. I mean, I guess that when I first heard it, I thought, yeah, I bet that's a load of men, mainly, doing it. Mm. And I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, they just want to get their dollars off.
All right. Thank you very much, Keith. I've heard you loud and clear. You think they're, you think they shouldn't be doing it then, overall, but you're not massively offended by it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think other things are more original.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Thank you. By the way, I should have said this right at the start. We are coming to the end of the programme, but you've still got 12 minutes. If you were trouserless on the tube at any point, I really want to hear from you. Pick up the phone. If you've ever done this, 0345 6060973, if you've done the whole no trousers on the tube, I really do want to hear your thoughts. Peter's in Haringey. Hello, Peter.
Hello, yeah, this is just a disgrace. They've taken advantage of Britain, British culture, British stiff upper lip.
Well, they are British, though.
I mean, it's just, no, they're a disgrace. I mean, look, they're just winding people up. But the thing is, there's a strict etiquette on the London Tube. You don't get in people's spaces, you don't interact with people, and this is going to blow up on them. Someone's going to take dislike to this, and there's going to be trouble. And they'll just, you know, it'll serve them right, basically. Someone's going to take a dislike to it. They don't want this. You don't want to be... you don't want to be looking at people in their underpants, do you? Really? I mean, come on.
But what? It's not doing much harm, they would say.
No, it shouldn't be allowed.
Peter, it's not like they're doing this Monday to Friday on the commute.
Look,
they're picking
one day a year.
It's not a massive problem at the time of year. Come on, lighten up
a bit. There's a strict etiquette on the London Tube, and you have to behave. You don't interact with people, and you don't want to be seeing people walking around like that. Do you? This is gonna go wrong for them, isn't it? And it serves them right. I mean,
I think we need to get you to try this, Peter. Are you willing to be our guinea pig? And I don't know what your plans are tomorrow, but let's just see how you get on. We'll put
I'll
an
let,
LBC
I'll
camera
let you,
with
Henry.
You for the day.
I'll let you, I'll let you. You can fit in one of your shifts. You can fit in. Do a report for Nick Ferrari.
Well, don't tell Nick Ferrari, because he'll love this, won't he?
get Nick to do it. Nick Ferrari. I'll tell you, get the presenters to do it. Come on.
I'm trying to think who'd be most likely to do it. Probably me. Oh, Ian Payne would do it, wouldn't he, actually? Ian Payne. He probably was one of the 400.
They should be arrested and locked up, these people.
All right. Thank you, Peter. Appreciated. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Jackie says, hi, Henry. I did no trousers on the Tube event a few years ago, and the public just laughed, and some even followed us around the stations. It was good, clean fun and really nice people. I think times have moved on, though, and maybe that should be a thing of the past, says Jacqueline in Watford. Ian says, it's a very smart-ass London thing to do. Parents who do it with their children need to give their head a wobble. Well, he was saying, Dave, our guest who organised it, was saying kids as young as 8 are doing it, which I was slightly surprised by. Steve in Melbourne, who's an ex-Londoner, says, I didn't find the gentleman that you interviewed remotely funny. In fact, I found it embarrassing. I have a problem with this sort of behaviour, but then again, I have a problem with people wearing activewear on the streets when they obviously haven't visited a gym in years. Yes. And this from Mick says, the no trousers is all a bit of fun. I'd rather have someone sat next to me like that than someone who stinks of drugs or is off their head on drugs or alcohol. Yes, make it for charity. That would be better. Would call but busy working the night shift at the Royal Mail. Well, you're doing the Lord's work. Thank you very much for that. And Matt in High Wycombe says, normally your choice of topic is great, but this hour is really pants. Very good. On a slightly more serious note, I bet most of them are doing it for clicks and like on social media. Yawn, says Matt. Adam's in Haringey. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Henry. How are you doing?
Very well. Have you ever done this?
Never done this. I'm not sure. Maybe if it was an organised charity thing, maybe. But I think the devil's in the detail on this one. When you were speaking to the organiser of the event earlier, there's a few things that sort of raised some red flags with me about it's purely just for fun. And my question is, what kind of fun? I'd be worried in 400 people that there might be people who are receiving an unsavoury amount of gratification from what they're doing. And
that is true, yeah.
Particularly the idea that it's in the Tube, and the organiser said that they wait until you're physically in the carriage, and then if someone who doesn't want to be there can't then remove themselves from that situation. If there's nudity at carnival or a pride parade, if someone doesn't want to be there, they can leave, or they're probably there by choice. But in this scenario, I think it's a gratification of inflicting it on people that can't leave that environment. It's a tight space. And I just think there's too much possibility for bad actors.
I think that's a good point, actually. Something I should have raised earlier about the tightness of the space as well. Because you're right. I mean, if you're sort of standing on a street corner doing it, it's slightly different. Whereas if you're on a Tube, yeah, you can wait for the next one. But you haven't really got a choice if all of these free spirits get on your carriage, have you?
Exactly. You're trapped there till the next stop. And if you wanted to remove yourself, you can't. And if you don't like it, you can't. And I think that there's a room for people to inflict something on someone. I think that might be the fun that I think some people might get out of it.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam. More calls. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Should you be able to strip off to just your pants on transport in Britain? If you don't live in London, how would you feel if this was on your local bus route or on your train, for example? Would you think it was weird? Sharon says, I think it's awful. I'd be really upset if my teenage daughter was sitting next to some guy who started undressing. And this, Robert says, what's next, thongs? I mean, the thing is, it's they are still dressed, and they're not wearing sort of very small pants. So they are wearing sort of briefs and boxers, and they, you know, it's maybe look at the pictures. It's not as as serious as some are making out, but equally, I don't think we should necessarily be forced to endure it. Tiago is in Bristol. Hello, Tiago.
Oh, hi, Henry. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. What do you think about this?
Well, I see things that, you know, very distinct things are being mixed together. Your previous caller now made an excellent point about choice and opting in, and I think that's very important. And this is an example on the tube, very relevant. But I wanted to talk more just about normalizing nakedness as a whole and sexualizing bodies, which are separate concepts.
Okay.
And you know, there is an overlap where, you know, nakedness and sex happen. And that's where we need boundaries. And that's, you know, how we should have boundaries. If you think then in this Venn diagram that you add a third circle of public spaces, we have yet more friction and yet more need for boundaries. But I don't think we should demonize being naked because there are friction points.
Hold on, you don't want people getting on the tube completely naked, do you, Tiago?
No, I don't. I'm not saying that. What I'm telling you, as your previous caller said, is that the tube does raise problems because it doesn't give people choice, opposed to a carnival where you cannot walk in. I don't disagree. What I'm saying is we should not demonize nakedness and the naked body because there are points of friction. If you think about countries like Sweden, when they have this sauna culture where families that don't know each other share a public space naked, it's shown that people are less likely to have body issues. And not to simplify things here, I understand people sexualize this kind of behavior and derive gratification. But do you know what creates pervs? Is taboos. And if you create a taboo, you create a perv. It's a chicken and egg. So if we treat bodies as exclusively sexual things, we create behavior that fixates on the body as a sexual item. So it reinforces itself. The more we normalize nakedness as just, you know, you human being, the less likely I have to behavior that will breach the boundaries between a body and sex.
Okay, so we need to learn to live with this. That's what you're saying.
No, you're simplifying my point here.
I do get your point. No, but it's a point. I do get your point, but it's a way of seeing nakedness.
I don't think the tube pants thing is the cleverest of the stunts you can pull.
What about the naked bike ride?
I've seen it, and I don't take part because I don't have a bike.
That's the only thing stopping you, is it? Thank you, Tiago, in Bristol. This says, where's it gone? From James says, the fact you seem so disgusted by the human body is worrying. I wish it were just a you problem, but regarding the body as inherently dirty and wrong is incredibly damaging to our society and children. So yeah, thanks for this. But I'm not saying I'm disgusted. I'm just a case of whether you'd want it, really. Lee says, why don't these people put their underwear on top of their trousers or jeans instead? They still look weird to some at the same time, and they'd stand out less exhibitionists. They might be, and no one could be offended. Symbol, says Lee. Jonathan, the same joke. This conversation is pretty pants. Okay, I think we're not going to find agreement on this, basically, the whole subject of whether we think it is acceptable to go trouserless on the underground. Thank you very much for all of your messages. I'm going to be back tonight at 10. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back or catch up on the LBC app or the Global Player app. On the LBC app, you can stay up to date with all of the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. That's the all-new official LBC app. Download it for free from your app store now. At 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne, but right now, with his trousers on for once, Richard Spur.
Yes. Good morning. Pupils and staff at an old school have voted to remove the name of Samuel Pepys from one of its houses following revelations about their former pupils' treatment of women. But isn't it possible to separate the art from its creator and still enjoy their work? But first, the government's dropped plans requiring workers to sign up to its digital ID scheme in order to prove their right right to work in the UK. By the end of the decade, right to work checks will be done digitally, but registering with the new programme will now be optional. Look, it's Keir Starmer's 13th U-turn, unlucky for some, since he came to power. So this morning, is such an indecisive man fit to run the country? And are ID cards an intrusion into your personal freedom? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Donald Trump has said he'll take very strong action if Iran's regime hangs protesters. The US has urged its own citizens in the country to leave as speculation ramps up about American military action. After a reported 2,000 deaths in anti-government demonstrations, President Trump says help is on its way to protesters. Labour MP Alex Sobel isn't sure what he means.
I want the will of the Iranian people to be seen through in a peaceful way, which obviously isn't happening. The tradition has been the US and other nations will go and bomb some installations in Iran. I don't think that's going to help the Iranian people at this time. So I'm not sure what help he means, but if it's traditional help, then that I don't think is actually helpful at all.
A new Birmingham to Manchester rail line has got the go-ahead, but the government is providing no timeline. Sir Keir Starmer said it would not happen until after Northern Powerhouse Rail, aimed at boosting east-west rail links in Northern England, is completed. The North East Mayor, Labour's Kim McGuinness, is looking forward to the better links around County Durham into Washington and Newcastle that project promises.
That will unlock not only jobs, but homes, opportunity for people who've been excluded from the railway for far too long. So that will be life-changing for existing communities, but also it'll help us to build new ones and bring new jobs to the region.
It's understood the government has backtracked on plans for mandatory digital ID cards for workers. Ministers had said they would be compulsory to prove someone's rights to work in the UK by the end of this parliament. Now it seems that existing paperwork will continue to be accepted. Lib Dem MP Helen Morgan told LBC the whole scheme is an expensive folly.
We think it's a bad idea. We've said it was a bad idea to start off with. It costs a phenomenal amount of money. I think the number floating around was about £1.8 billion. We think that money would have been better put into things like providing extra beds in the NHS or maybe frontline policing. There's lots of public services that need investment.
The head of the UK's exams regulator says there is cause for anxiety among teachers over AI being used to cheat. Ofqual boss Sir Ian Bocombs told MPs it's a particular problem with high coursework subjects like history and English. He also claimed the technology's not yet ready to mark exam papers.
It can be used to quality assure, but not sole marking of student work. That's because AI still makes